Roll call. Commissioner Marks?
Here.
Commissioner O'Grady?
Here.
Commissioner Slane?
Here.
Chairperson O'Keefe?
Here. And the other three have excused absences.
Okay, thank you.
Is there a motion to approve the agenda?
Oh, I will move to approve the agenda.
Second.
Second.
Moved and seconded. Roll call.
Commissioner O'Grady?
Before I vote, could I ask a question? Because I think I've messed this up once before. When I approve the agenda, if I want to pull an item, do I need to do that before?
No. On the consent calendar, if you want to pull something, you can pull it because you're not changing the agenda.
So I can still pull it after I vote?
Yes.
Okay. Commissioner Marks?
Yes.
Commissioner Slane?
Yes.
Chairperson O'Keefe?
Yes.
4-0. Motion passes.
We have guidelines or rules of decorum that we follow. To the speakers, please direct your comments to the entire commission and not to any individual. Please do not use slanderous, profane, or negative personal remarks concerning individuals absent or present. And to the audience, I ask that you be respectful and courteous to the speakers and refrain from vocal expressions of approval or disapproval, such as clapping or heckling. If you find yourself in agreement with a speaker, you can just raise your hand, but please do not clap. Thank you. And this is the time for disclosure of ex parte communications. I'll start at that end this time.
I visited the sites on items 2, 3, and 4, talked to Main Street board members Maria Hooper and Barbie Boots, talked to Main Street Executive Director Steve Martin, and the applicant on item 4.
I have none to declare.
And I met with Mr. Gerhardt and Jamie Kirk, his consultant, out at the property because I couldn't get on, which was okay. I met them out there, and they answered my questions. Oh, and that was for item number 5, Eagle Creek Golf Course. Sorry.
I visited all of the project sites, and with regard to item 5, I spoke with Commissioner Ellen Bayrow about the City Council's study session and specifically her interpretation of its position as far as Tier 1 and Tier 2 benefits.
This is a time reserved for public comment, and this is for persons wishing to address the commission on any matter that's not on the agenda and over which the commission has jurisdiction. Speakers are limited to 5 minutes. Please state your name for the record before making your presentation. The commission may take action to direct the staff to place a matter of business on a future agenda.
Commissioner Marks?
Yes.
Commissioner Slane?
I'll have to abstain. I wasn't here last planning commission meeting.
Chairperson O'Keefe?
Yes. And item 2 on the consent calendar?
Yes. Is this the time where I can discuss my reasons for pulling the item?
Yes, go
okay.
Right ahead.
The reason
and or ask questions if you want to have questions of staff.
Yeah. In fact, I would even like to make a motion to approve item 2, but I would like to add a condition in as much as I believe it's item 6 tonight is consideration of a new condominium ordinance, and actually item 2 has to do with condominium projects, so I would just like to condition it such that when the new condominium ordinance is approved, that the project be comply with that ordinance, except if construction has started prior to the approval of the ordinance.
Okay, I have a question of staff, and with regard to this, since this is a new this was a brand new project, it was not a condominium conversion, is that correct?
Yeah, this was just a new condo project.
I think there's a little bit of concern with such a open-ended condition in that we don't know what the final outcome of the ordinance that's before the commission and council is tonight. So it would be hard to condition it on something that won't be known for, you know, at least 2 months in terms of what those rules and requirements will be. So I think, you know, if the lawyer was here, he'd probably advise you that that would be a risky condition to add to the project.
Okay, and I have a question. Because of the number of residential units, didn't it have to meet the inclusionary housing requirements?
No, only legislative projects, which are PDs and general plan amendments, are subject to inclusionary housing.
Was there any inclusionary housing in this project?
No.
There wasn't.
Oh. Excuse me? There was a PD.
You want to explain it, Carrie?
There is a PD on the project, and they were required to do inclusionary housing.
Oh, I'm glad I remember something.
Okay. Now, there's two projects, right? One's 44 units, the other's four, something like that.
What it is the first project came through correct, and then the first project anticipated the second portion of the project coming forward. So the first project included that but didn't acknowledge it, but couldn't include it completely until the second portion of the property was purchased and then brought into the PD. So, yes, it's two, and that's why you have two separate maps that are being extended with the project.
Okay, since staff thinks that my motion's not a good idea, I'd like to withdraw that motion if I could.
Okay, and I do think that, as I recall from this PD, since it wasn't a conversion and did go through quite a bit of scrutiny, that it basically meets most of the requirements now that are being recommended.
Could I ask one more question?
Of course.
Probably the third week in January, so we would be adding a significant amount of time to the process. I'm not sure on our code what the time limits are for us to make a decision on extension, but delaying it 3 months might be on the long side of that.
So I guess there's no way to accomplish what I'm trying to accomplish here, which is to make this project subject to the latest condominium ordinance.
May I ask?
I think
Carrie
it's cumbersome.
Carrie, doesn't this project comply with most of the requirements in the condominium ordinance that's being proposed?
My understanding is that yes, it would.
Or does?
It would. It was a PD project and a general plan amendment. It has a master plan of development, CUP, on it now, which is what this new ordinance would have required. If it didn't have a CUP, it would have had to have one. But this Principal Avenue project already has a master plan.
Okay, and I think it had the required amount of space open, you know, space. It said that, like 10 by 10, a minimum. It seemed to me that most of the units met those requirements. Okay. So I think it does, this particular one. Okay. So is there a motion to approve item number 2 on the consent calendar?
Okay. I'll make the motion to approve.
Well, it was worth the discussion. I mean, yeah. It brought up some interesting issues. Is there a second?
I'll second that.
It's been moved and seconded. Roll call.
Commissioner O'Grady?
Yes.
Commissioner Slane?
Yes.
Commissioner Marks?
Yes.
Chairperson O'Keefe?
Yes.
4-0, motion passes.
We'll move on to our first public hearing, which is the BMX track at Sycamore. May we have the staff report?
It's just give me a moment here to bring the presentation up. Okay. Good evening, Madam Chair, members of the Commission. Tonight we have the Tascadero BMX track proposal. It is a planned development overlay, noting that the zone overlay zone will be 31, corrected from 30 that is in your staff report and resolutions. And this is located at 6575 Sycamore Road. The project is a BMX bicycle motocross track. It is located adjacent to Salinas River. It contains regular and overflow parking. Portable restrooms will be provided. There's a storage building proposed, concession stand, and announcer's booth. The project is located on Sycamore. The general plan designation is industrial, and the zone is industrial park. This is an aerial view. If we need to come back to it, we have it here in the slide presentation. Vacant area owned by the Tascadero Water Company. This is the master plan of development showing the site with one other notation is we have the Anza Trail, which runs along the edge of the project area between the river proper and the site. In terms of landscaping, the project would retain existing oak trees and sycamores along the Sycamore Ave frontage. Landscaping is proposed along the Anza Trail as a buffer to the trail for aesthetic purposes, and their turf area is provided for spectator viewing. A little bit about the floodway is that the project is located in the Salinas River floodway. That's a designation where we typically do not allow permanent structures to occur. However, this proposal includes portable structures that they'll be designed to be portable so they could be located off the site in a manner that would, that in case of flooding, would be able to be removed in a timely manner. Also, in terms of grading, there's no earth being brought onto the site. The site would balance for the minimal grading that's required to provide a flat parking surface as well as the berms provided for the track. And erosion control measures, of course, are conditioned on the site. There was a draft mitigated negative declaration for this project. There's a modification on measure 8.H(I)(1), which is in your staff report. And there is findings that there would be no significant effect with the mitigations in place. And staff is recommending the commission certify this negative declaration. In terms of general plan consistency, staff was looking at the policy that provides for a wide range of recreational activities and leisure experiences to all age group, which is one of the, or probably the primary redeeming benefit to the PD overlay. We have the findings in your staff report. Before I just get into the conclusion, the project, I just forgot what I was going to say on that, but so I think I'll just go to the conclusion that we have the, oh, I know what it was, that we did meet earlier on. This project's been around for, or the idea of the project's been around for a little bit, and I just wanted to share that with you. In 2006, staff recommended that the applicant and staff get together with the neighborhood, so we sent a mailing out to the adjacent neighbors, and we did have neighbors show up, and we met here at City Hall, and about half a dozen to a dozen neighbors showed up, as well as then the BMX folks showed up as well. So we had a good discussion about a number of items and concerns, mostly of the neighborhood concerns and those related to noise, safety, light, traffic, parking, those kinds of things, related probably mostly to the events, a little bit to the daily activities that might occur on site. And then there was a little confusion as to who was operating the site. But what's presented to you tonight, as explained in your staff report, is that the BMX Association would be constructing and operating the site. The city would not be. So there were questions about who would be patrolling and checking for parking and those things, and that would be all a private facility based on the association monitoring their activities, scheduling their activities, making sure that they're good neighbors in their activities, as well as being sure that the types of activities are appropriate to the parking accommodations that they would have, that they would have on site available. So I hope that...
City Engineer Steve Kahn about the location of the driveway. It appears to be a good distance from the parking lot to the east of the site. Could you explain to me why it's there, and rather than 80 feet closer, which could save... probably save the group some money.
Yeah, the driveway is moved down the road approximately 80 feet down for a site distance. As you go closer to the parking lot, there are trees and obstructions in the roadway that we noticed during our site visits to the north of this entrance. So the 80 feet away would meet the site distance criteria for this project so that people could exit and enter with being able to see cars approaching either direction.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Do you have any other questions?
Not right now.
Commissioner O'Grady.
Okay. I see a lot of young folks in the audience tonight, and presumably you're all bike riders. I imagine this is pretty exciting for you. Not the meeting, because these meetings tend to get a little boring. But I remember when I was a kid, I was a bike rider and a roller skater. I wish I'd have had a BMX track. So we have to ask some questions here tonight to make sure, as we can, that your facility will be as safe as possible and be appropriate for the city. So I just wanted to preface my remarks with that and welcome the young folks here tonight. I do have a few questions. Just starting with the ownership of the land on which the track will be built, I understand the property is owned by Atascadero Mutual Water, but somehow the city is in the middle there between Atascadero Mutual and the BMX Association. Could you explain how that is proposed to work?
I think to give you a full explanation, I'm going to hand this off to Director Brady Cherry.
Good evening, Chairperson O'Keefe, members of the Planning Commission. It's my pleasure to be here tonight. I don't get to attend many Planning Commission meetings. To give you a little background on the history of the project, the BMX Association was formerly located in Santa Margarita near the KOA campground there, and they lost their ability to remain at that site about 3 or so years ago now. And so they approached the city of Atascadero because there are so many members of the association that live in Atascadero about finding an appropriate site for a BMX track here in our community. The city, unfortunately, didn't own any property that we could identify that would be suitable for the BMX track at that time. So as we began to scout around the community, we found this property located adjacent to the Salinas River, which was owned by the Mutual Water Company, as Mr. McCarris has said. And that site was really found because many years ago, probably 10 years ago now, we actually had a BMX track at the site, track being built there. However, they would prefer, in fact, it was the board's decision that the city be the leaseholder of the property rather than the association. And I think the board was doing that for a couple of reasons, and I don't want to go too much into it because I really don't know all of their reasons for that. But I know they preferred to have a relationship with the city to be the responsible party to hold the lease on the land and address some of their concerns about care and maintenance of the property, liability, and those types of issues. And so there has been a draft lease prepared by our previous city attorney. It has been sent to the water company for their review, and our new city attorney now is reviewing that lease. The lease is for 3 years with the option of a one-year extension. And it does address some of those issues that I mentioned, such as liability. It requires that the city carry a certain amount of liability insurance. And as you know, or as you may know, the city of Atascadero is self-insured, so we wouldn't actually go out and buy additional insurance policies for this particular track. What we would do is just give the water company a letter saying that we are adequately insured should something happen. And I should also mention that part of this arrangement, really this tripartite or three-way arrangement, would include an agreement between the Atascadero BMX Association and the city of Atascadero, and that agreement would be a licensing agreement or an operating agreement, which would set forth certain terms and conditions of the relationship that the city and the association expect, that would deal with issues very similar to those in the lease agreement with the water company, such as care and maintenance of the track and the liability issues. The BMX Association is part of a national organization, a national BMX league, and they are like many other nonprofit groups that they, like, for example, Little League or the Soccer Association, they are able to ensure some of their activities by being a member of this league, and I'm sure there's members of the association that could elaborate on that particular thing. So that's how the city got involved as the leaseholder, and certainly the city of Atascadero supports the BMX activities, would like to encourage it and support it here in town if possible. We think we've found a way to do that here at this site. And so the Parks and Recreation Commission, I think it's been almost 2 years now, has considered this and conceptually approved it at this location as well.
Thank you for your very thorough response. You mentioned responsibility and liability, and I noticed that one of the conditions on the project was a hold harmless agreement where the BMX Association would hold harmless the city. Presumably there's insurance in the area, and I wondered, you know, I didn't see any bike paths marked on Sycamore Road, and I wonder if staff has thought about access. I understand by car how that works, but I imagine some of our youth will try to ride down there on their own, and I'm a little concerned about that. Perhaps you could speak to your thoughts about that.
Well, certainly the Anza Trail is there, as Mr. McCarris mentioned in his report, and depending on the direction in which somebody was approaching on bicycle, the Anza Trail could be used, but I probably should refer that back to the planners because they may have more information about that issue.
No, we're not going to have any more information than that. I would have had the same response.
I have a couple questions. It says that the site area is 24 acres, but clearly it's not encompassing all of that. So how much acreage will the BMX track actually cover?
Chairperson O'Keefe, I know the lease agreement that we have with the water company is for 3 acres, just a little bit over 3 acres.
Okay. And in the event that this organization didn't continue to function because the people who, the adults who are really involved in it for some reason or another don't have the time, what would the obligation of the city be? And I'm specifically thinking of cost, manpower, this kind of a thing. Because we have a lot of deferred maintenance issues with regard to Parks and Rec. And since we're the leaseholders on this, and this is at a distance from any of the other recreation facilities that we have, if the city ends up having to take over, what do you anticipate the cost will be?
Well, actually, that is addressed in the lease that we're proposing with the water company, and it would also be language in the city's operating agreement with the association. If the association ceased to operate the property as a BMX track or ceases to maintain it adequately, or otherwise just go out of business, the property would be reclaimed and it would go back to the water company. The city wouldn't necessarily take it over and operate it, although that would be an option that we could consider at that time if we had the resources. But the way the agreements are worded now, if the association were to just walk away or die out so to speak, then the property would just go back to the water company.
Okay, and then you've mentioned that the leases and the there's a hold harmless clause, et cetera, are being reviewed by the attorneys now. Why were these not completed prior to bringing this to the commission so that you know everybody knows what's going on, what they're signing, what we're committing ourselves to?
This is a conceptual approval for this property, and as was mentioned in Steve McCarris's report, it is in a floodway, and part of the requirement for a floodway is that the flood levels of the Salinas River are neither raised or lowered by the grading in here. We feel they can meet that need, so what would happen is once they got into the construction documents, we would determine that, but I don't think they'll be needing any net fill or cut to create this facility so that it won't be offsetting the water elevations.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Go right ahead.
I'm sorry, I forgot one question. Last Friday, I picked up the Atascadero News, and I read a nice article about BMX Association. But in there, I also learned that there was another site under consideration near our new community center. And so I was a little concerned about considering this project tonight and going forward with it at this time until concerned that there would be some effect on those negotiations. So could you talk about that?
Well, I think what we have is the BMX Association has made this application, so this is the application. What you read in the paper, there may be discussions ongoing. They may go on for some time. They may result in nothing, but but there's been no application for that. So the only thing brought to you for consideration or analyzed by staff is this site with this application.
I have a question, Mr. Cherry. Could you address that alternate site and where it is and what's involved?
Yes. The site that was mentioned by Commissioner O'Grady is an overflow basin for the city's stormwater and wastewater system currently. Eventually, and that's it's still in use today should there be an event like that, there are plans underway to replace that basin with a tank, with an above-ground tank on the property, which would then render that basin surplus and would be something that the city can convert that property there at the New Colony Park to some other recreational use. That being the case, there are still a lot of issues, including environmental issues, that need to be determined before we even know if that's a real site, if it's feasible, that kind of thing. There needs to be phase one environmental done, soils testing, that type of thing. There are many issues and questions that are unknown at this time. So even though that's a possibility, it's really not a real project, and we probably shouldn't concern ourselves with it at this time because we'd like to proceed with the current application. And then at such time, if we find that that property is feasible and the city council and the city is willing to convert that site to some other use, we can probably deal with it at that time. And we're hoping to find out whether or not it's feasible to use that site as soon as possible. But at this point, we felt it prudent, both the BMX Association and city staff, to continue forward.
They're proposing to have a concession stand, a ticket booth, and some restroom facilities, and I would like the applicant to address exactly what there are. But what we've worked out with them, that since it's in the floodway, is during the summer and the dry months, those facilities could remain on the facility. And then as of December 1st through March 1st, we'd want them off the facility. Those are high rainy seasons, and we're concerned about the flooding in that area at that time.
Okay, and with regard to the bathroom facilities, those would be like the portable ones, is that what it would be?
Yeah, I'd leave that question to the applicants. I would believe so, but I'd like them to verify.
Okay. The reason I'm asking these questions is I'm thinking ahead. If the city has a site in the future, that would be closer in where, if city staff has to participate, how difficult it would be for them to move, you know, whatever they put in there. And then how much fencing is going up? It's a 3-acre parcel. Is the chain link fencing going all around the 3 acres or what?
To my understanding, yes. I think the chain link fencing that exists along Sycamore remains. It's the vegetation's growing through it. That's okay. But we can also check with the applicant. To the degree I'm familiar with the improvements, most of the area would be fenced, and I think it's for security reasons.
But just fenced along Sycamore or along the backside
also?
Along
the backside also.
Okay. All right. Just a minute. I'll be opening it up to the public in just a minute. Okay, are there any other questions? Okay, with that, if you're representing the group, would you please give your name and make your presentation?
Yes, Madam Chair O'Keefe. My name is Tom Jordan. I live at 8255 Grays Creek Road. I'm representing Atascadero BMX. In answer to the most recent question, we're required by the National Bicycle League to completely fence the property. So it'll be completely fenced with a 6-foot cyclone fence. That's required for our insurance purposes.
Okay.
Okay, that being said, I'm just going to touch briefly upon BMX. I have to dispel a couple of myths. One is, despite the fact that there's MOTO in that acronym, there are no motors involved at all. These are strictly people-powered bicycles. The track is a series of turns and jumps. It's all earthen. The only structures per se would be the aforementioned fence. We're proposing to put 3 buildings in place, two of which are about 10 by 15, and one is, I think, 12 by 15. These will be skid-mounted buildings. One will be a concession stand, one for registration and sign-ups, and one for storage. All of these would be easily removed to meet the December 1 deadline. There was a question raised earlier about fill. We will probably be bringing in at most 25 yards of a clay material that's required to get the right consistency on the track. I recognize the displacement issue with being in the floodway, and so whatever amount that we do import, we agree that we will take from the site, so there's no net change in the displacement or the water. There was another question you raised. I'm not seeing it right now. Nonetheless, we have been out of a track for about 5 years in this community. We filed this application in April of 2003. This is the third of sites that we have been looking at. This is the one that we've done the most work towards, that your planning staff has worked most on. This is the one where we've gone back and forth to address all the issues that have been raised heretofore. This is the one that we like right now, and it suits our needs, and we're hoping that the city can see it that way and approve it also. That being said, within the last month, this issue of the alternate site has been raised. It does have some advantages, and we do intend to look at that one also. It may be something that we could do together that works out to meet both of our needs. If that's the case, great. But as of this time, we're going to continue to pursue this track that's on Sycamore Road. I'm representing about 20 families in this community. My son races. We've added some more riders of late. There's been considerable interest in this since we've talked about getting the track in the community. I field quite a few calls every week, people in the street asking about the track. I don't know if you've seen Kevin Costner's movie, Field of Dreams, but clearly if we build this track, they will come. Just somebody seeing the bicyclists in the air and seeing the races will pique their curiosity, and it will become more and more popular. I know what it was, overflow parking. A couple of times a year, maybe 3 times a year, there will be larger events that we would like to host. And these larger events would necessitate the use of that overflow parking that was mentioned. These events typically bring on the order of 200 people into the community. Those people need a place to stay. They need to eat while they're here. They stay here for a couple of days, and then they go on their way. That, I think, is an economic plus to our community. But it also means that overflow parking only need be used probably 2 to 3 times a year. So no, we're not proposing any extensive improvements to that other than T-post and nylon rope and maybe chalking out some white lines. Other than that, it'll just be native ground. You know, the other aspect of this project that's very difficult for me to put into terms is an intangible one, and that is that it's no news to any of you that our youth are at risk right now. And there's a lot of temptation out there. There's a lot of material. There's a lot of activities. There's a lot of substances that our youth can get involved in. And I know I've been touched by it in this community. I'm sure that some of y'all have been as well. BMX bicycle racing provides an opportunity not only for the youth to find something that they can get passionate about and enjoy and do and show their individuality and show their uniqueness in the style that they ride and what have you. But it's also an activity that draws a lot of families. Grandparents, there are actually parents and even grandparents that race BMX. But even if they don't race, they're there at the track. And there's a lot of mentoring that goes on. And these people become extended families. And it helps to fill that void that I've seen with some families that either have even when the amplified system is used, it's approximately 2.5 to 3 hours on a Saturday and a Sunday, maybe 4 times a year max. It's not as though we use that PA system that extensively. The other noise that one could possibly hear is the cheering of a parent or a grandparent or a whole crowd of people as 2 6-year-olds are going elbow to elbow trying to get to that finish line, and everybody jumps up and screams and hollers in excitement. That does happen at the track. There were also some issues raised about the lighting. We've agreed to not use any lighting and just operate the track during daylight hours only. There was an issue about the De Anza Trail and the potential incompatibility of bicycles with that trail. In response to their concerns, we redesigned the track and we relocated all of the parking, the overflow parking, to underneath the Highway 41 bridge, so as to keep them sufficiently distant from the trail itself. You will notice in the drawing that they put up earlier, there's an awkward bend that's being placed in the De Anza Trail. That we had to add a 48-foot turning radius per the fire department, and that's what forces that bend in the De Anza Trail. And, of course, when we put the access to the site in, we will put that bend in the trail and be sure it's done in a good way so it meets whatever uses we'll be using the De Anza Trail. That pretty well concludes my presentation. I'll certainly entertain any questions that any of the staff may have or any of the commissioners may have.
Are there any questions? Yeah. Go ahead.
Welcome.
Thank you.
Staff report talks about restrooms. They'll be managed and maintained by you?
Yes, sir.
Can you explain a little bit of what that is?
Yeah, they're trailerized porta-johns.
Okay.
And they will be the handicap ones that are wider than a normal porta-john. We'll just have 2 handicap access porta-johns that will be used both by handicap and people.
Okay.
And they're only taken there. You know, I haven't worked out the details of that, to tell the honest truth, but I doubt that we'll remove them every weekend. They'll probably stay there on the site, and then we'll have to work up a maintenance schedule depending on their usage. Probably weekly they'll be serviced.
Okay. How easy are those to be tipped over?
Well, I mean, it can happen. It has happened. My experience, I'm working on a job in South County now where there are the handicap ones that are larger. They have a larger footprint, and they are much more difficult to tip over. I would say that 4 grown men would have a difficult time tipping over the handicap access port-a-can.
Okay.
The individual occupying it would know long before that something was going on before they walked out of their blue.
Yeah, I'm mainly concerned about off hours. I know it's going to be fenced, but I've seen the restrooms tipped over before.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Let's see. I think you said that the buildings are skid-mounted. Okay, that's all the questions I have. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Maybe I missed it, but I'd like them to say that. You would have no objection to
no,
that,
No, sir.
I assume.
We're very strict about that. All we need is a motorcycle to go in there and tear the thing up.
Okay. And since this is daylight only, I think you said there wouldn't need to be any lighting, right?
Yes, sir. That's correct. Okay. There will be no lighting.
But there is a PA system, so there would need to be an electrical service to the project to run the amplification.
Thank you very much. We do utilize a temporary generator that we use to power both the starting gate and the amplified power system. We have in the project description, I think I have 12 components of the project, and that's one of the ones that's kind of a gee shucks darn. If things go really well and this takes off, we'd like to get electrical service eventually, but for the time being, we're just going to utilize a portable generator.
Okay. You mentioned the PA system. Is that just for announcements, or will there be music playing during the event?
A little of both. Technically, we utilize it primarily for announcements, but if I told you that music wouldn't be played through it, I'd be lying to you. If there was some condition on the project that said, thou shalt not play music, we would abide by that condition. That being said, it is kind of nice to have music out there sometimes when the riders are riding.
I agree. It's just in my research into BMX tracks, that is one of the sore points with neighbors that cause hard feelings with BMX tracks, and you wouldn't want that to compromise the greater good. And also litter. Could you speak to, since you'll be maintaining this site, could you talk about how you would handle that?
Sure, gladly. We are an all-volunteer organization, and for the track to be open, one of the NBL adults, I believe it's 18 or older or 21 or older, I forget now which, at least one has to be present during the activity. Typically, there's four or five adults there, and that would be our responsibility to keep the site clean, remove trash, and what have you. My experience with the track out in Margarita is that it was always clean. Our biggest concern was we had a fox that kept digging a big hole in one of the turns, but trash was not an issue for us at that site.
Okay. And just to follow up on the amplification, I believe you said there would be only one speaker.
Yes, sir.
So that could also be a condition on page 104 that could be added. Okay. Let's see. That may be... be everything here.
At this point, Commissioner O'Grady, you're hard-pressed to come up with a condition that I wouldn't agree with.
Well,
it has been a long road to get to this point.
I'm trying not to abuse the privilege, but there are just a few things I thought might be important. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And I just have one question. You said that there's a $45 membership, but is there an additional cost for the young people when they actually come and use the cross?
Yes, Madam Chair. Typically, we charge $5 for a practice, and all that money goes into the site for hay bales and water hoses and things like that, rakes and such that we need for the site proper.
Okay. All right. Thank you. If there's no other questions, I will open it up to the public. And the applicant has given...
there was a couple issues that most of them... he just addressed with everything I was writing down. The insurance agreement is a $6 million policy that NBL provides. The policy is paid for by rider fees, the fees that he was discussing earlier. It's pretty much loosely based on a dollar a rider per participant. And also in those rider fees, typically I pass out 20 to 30 trophies a week, and $3 or $4 a cost per trophy. So those rider fees roll right back into the trophy costs and the insurance and sanctioning body fees. It's a great activity. The family aspect can't be stressed enough. When the majority of your rider base is 12 to 6 years old, grandpa, grandma, aunt, and uncle, everybody comes out. When you see these 6-year-old kids coming up, you know, 8-foot-tall doubles and 10-foot corners and racing the little heart out, and everybody's cheering on them, it's just such an activity that it's amazing how much development the kids get physically and mentally and emotionally for to face life and the problems that they go through. Because some kids, especially at my Madera track, they don't have a positive role male role model in their life. And some of these kids come out there and they'll practice for 10 minutes, then come over and talk to me for 15 minutes, and then practice another 10 minutes. And they're just looking for some acceptance and somebody saying, you're doing a good job. And single family homes don't have that sometimes. Single parent homes don't have that sometimes. And they need that type of exposure and community involvement. And this Atascadero BMX facility, parent group has been without a track for 3 years, yet they've stayed together and been. This shows you how much bonded they are to each other as a group and supporting each other, and that the city should be proud to support them and be in a partnership with them for this to happen. One of the things that that the city of Fresno had on me to get the program started is we had a low income assistance program for some of the kids that might be able to afford racing, and how we addressed that is if there was a low-income indication on their power bill that they're on a low-income assistance rate, then we put aside 50 cents a rider into a fund to assist them with the membership fee to do a 50-50 split with the cost of operating the BMX track. The other thing we also do is we have some loaner bikes that we lend out to just about any kid that needs them, and loaner helmets so that they have safe bikes and safety equipment for those kids that might not be able to afford them, and that is regardless of income, because some kids just show up with bikes without brakes and stuff like that, and it's important that they have safe equipment to use. And we maintain 8 of them right now in Madera. The Fresno track's about to start in about 2 months, so I have a feeling I'll be buying a few more bikes for the Fresno area. But if you guys have any direct questions on the operational of anything like that, you know, I've been running a BMX track for over 4 years now and helped several cities in the Central Valley get started. So they asked me to drive over tonight and see if there's anything I could help you guys with as a direct response.
Okay, thank you, sir.
Yeah. May I have your name for the record, sir?
Oh,
Brett Riley. Brett Riley. Thank you.
Hi there. I'm a citizen, Jerry Clay, 7285 Sycamore Road. Gone by there since the 1940s. Place for... from the standpoint of noise, I wouldn't get too restrictive on that. And the other thing is the old BMX park was opened all the time, and there was it was often that I seen fathers unload their boys' bikes, and they would be able to use it. And I would hope that it would be open for that type of use, because it's important that people can use it, all the time, not just when the BMX people are using it. And as far as the safety issue, people ride their bikes on Sycamore Road all the time. It's not highly traveled right now, and I ride my bike myself there, so it's the need for bike trails would be nice, but unfortunately I don't see that happening. But it's a fairly safe road. There's a good visibility and so on. So it's too bad they've had to wait this long. We need things for our youth, and let's approve this and not be too restrictive on them.
Good evening. My name is Susan Schroll. I live at 4000 Carrizo Road. My husband and I have been involved in bicycle motocross for 6 years. Our family, as a family, we went out to Margarita Lake to go fishing, and we discovered the BMX track that was located out there at Santa Margarita. We signed our son up, Ryan, who is 10 now, at 4 and a half, to ride his bike on the track and wave at everybody as he went by. My husband and I grew up playing sports, basketball, softball, soccer, and I was hoping, because I'm very competitive, that my son would grow up playing basketball, softball, and soccer. But my son had his own agenda. When he got on that track, it was all over. We signed him up for 1 year of soccer. I'm not knocking any of that. Like I said, I played those sports. he cursed us every time he had to go play soccer, and he told us, I just want to ride my bike. All of us in this crowd, you know, and I don't want to get sentimental, but, you know, this is the best family sport I've ever been involved in. If I would have had this opportunity as a child, I would have done this, because it's not. It's something different for the kids, and I think we need to dish the kids of this San Luis County something new. We've got the skateboard facilities, we've got baseball, we've got soccer, we've got all these fields. But everybody rides a bike. And I think we need to give the kids and myself, number one, 41, women's 41 and over, first place, an opportunity as a family to get out and have an opportunity to experience this. Unfortunately, the property at Santa Margarita was closed due to the owners wanting the property for other uses. For the past 4 years, we've traveled to other tracks to support our son for the need to ride and race, as I do. BMX is widely unknown to many people. Automatically, they think it is motorcycles and dust and noise and dirt. On the contrary, bicycle motocross is a well-organized, volunteered parent in different counties when we get together. And we don't just go to a race and leave. We stay, we visit, we stay overnight. We talk about old times, new people. And it's something that this town and this county needs to experience, and I would wish that you would support it. Thank you.
Thank you. Next speaker.
Yeah, my name's Adam Burgess. I live Faro Corral Road. I just wanted to say, from our kids' view, I work at Vaughn's, and everybody always asks me, like, when's the new track going to come in? It's everybody I don't even know, and I say, hopefully pretty soon, because they're really interested once they heard about the track. And I race since 2003, because I worked voluntarily at Cayman Cyclery, and I just heard about it from Keith, the owner, and I'm like, oh, cool. So I go down there and just check it out, and I had a really heavy bike, and it didn't do me much, but I had fun with it. And I always got last place, but I'm like, I don't care. And then I really got into it, so I bought me a race bike, a bike more meant for it, more lighter, more aerodynamic, more longer. And I loved it. And then I got into the state races and the championship. And about a year ago, I saved my money and invested about $2,000 into a new bike, and then it got stolen. And right before the championship, and everybody's such a big family to all the communities, and so they heard about everything, and they're like telling me, "Oh, here's a frame laying around. You can have it." And they're like helping me out, trying to find it. And that's how big of a community it is. And we just need a track over here because everybody's interested in it. Yeah. That's about it. And just, we need our track.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for speaking. Is there anybody else?
Kevin Souza. I live on 5320 Cabrillo. A couple of issues I'd like to address is, one is the sound. I live not more than probably 300 yards away from the track is on the other side of the railroad tracks on Cabrillo Street. I guarantee you I hear the football game going every Friday from the high school more than I would this track during the day. I can sit there at night and listen to the football game, and I live probably 3 miles away from the football game. And that's, you know, the sound from these tracks, I've been to quite a few of them now, doesn't carry more than a quarter mile, if that, and if you're lucky, if you have bad hearing like I do, you can't hear the loudspeaker when you're sitting at the track. So the loudspeakers aren't very loud. And this is a very family-oriented organization. It's a lot of fun for everybody. And the, like Jerry Clay is saying, on that road on Sycamore, is a bike issue if you ride bikes there. I also work at Cayman Cyclery. I do know the bike issues from riding bicycles all around the county. Our county road.
I work for an after-school program where I supervise approximately 350 students. And currently one of our focuses is on Lights On After School, where I've been researching things through the Search Institute, which provides the 40 developmental assets for youth, as well as the After 3 p.m. study on California, which is done by the After School Alliance in association with the Motts Foundation. And if you are familiar with or talk to your local youth task force about any of those research studies, you will find that BMX is in a sport that, as everyone has said, is very, very family-oriented, is very positive for your community. It is a sport that involves children on a level probably greater than some other local sports, because no children sit out. No one sits out. No one sits out and watches their team play. The children are all involved. It gives them things to do during practice and on weekends. And I'd like to thank you for your time.
Thank you. Anybody else? How many of you in the audience are here for the BMX and support it? Most of you. Okay, thank you. Okay, I'll close it to public comment and bring it back for discussion and a vote. Is there any further discussion?
Yeah, I have a question. Councilman Clay mentioned, I believe what I heard was public access. Am I correct? Is that possible to have public access rather than just membership, BMX membership? Yes.
Excuse me. I'm sorry. It has been closed to public comments. So I think we should either let Mr. Cherry, since he's been involved in this a lot, or Steve McCarris answer. Which one?
I'll take that. Okay. Chairperson O'Keefe, members of the commission, I think it's everyone's goal that we offer a track where the general public has the ability to use it as well. The way the BMX insurance works, however, that their insurance will only cover members of the association, the dues-paying members. Their insurance would not enable them to extend to non-members that are just using the track when it is not being supervised for sanctioned events. There's a couple of things we can do. One is that the City of Atascadero, through its Community Services Foundation, could offer scholarships, which we do for any other sport or youth activity, such as Little League, soccer, even band instruments and those types of things. So were we to have a child that could not afford the membership in the association, they could apply to the foundation, and in all likelihood, funds are available, the membership could be sponsored. The other thing that in the long term, we would like to be able to just open the track and have the city operate it during. I heard earlier, and perhaps Mr. Jordan could correct me if I'm wrong, but I think I heard earlier the membership was $45 a year.
Right.
So that's the membership that I think we can get scholarships for, and kids could apply for that, just as they do if their family can't afford the Little League fees and soccer fees, youth football fees, even cheerleading through the foundation, which I'm the secretary of the board of the foundation. We probably give out close to $10,000 a year in scholarships to families of youth just for these types of recreational activities.
Commissioner Marks, I'm confused about your question so that I can follow this. Are you asking that it be open additional hours, or are you addressing the issue of having young people who want to use it but may not have the $45 membership? Because what I did hear the public say is that the young people are not turned away if they don't have the money. You have that $45 membership, but you know, they said something like a dollar to ride if they don't have the money. And $5 nowadays isn't that much. So is it the issue of additional hours, or are you talking about having more young people involved?
Actually, I think it's both.
Okay, because there's an issue here. They're paying for the restrooms. Those are portable restrooms. There's the issues of litter. They're maintaining the track. And if there isn't somebody there watching, you know, there are problems. And there isn't staff time to have somebody down there.
Yeah, I don't argue that. But I think Mr. Clay has a good point. There probably are a lot of kids that are not BMX members that could use a track like that, and it may be worthwhile the city checking into something like that.
There's two ways to go, and I think, Chairperson O'Keefe, you illustrated those. One is that for the time being, any child that would like to use the track, we would endeavor that if they could not afford the association dues, that we would find a way to get them signed up and get them a scholarship so that no kid was unable to use the track. The other issue is the complete public access for anybody to come down and ride at any time when the track is not being used by the Association for Sanctioned Events. That would require the city staff, you know, to at least open and close it, probably having it open in an unsupervised way. And so that's something I think that we would, have a goal to do that at some point in the future. But right now there are no resources to staff it, open and close it, or anything like that. So right now what we're looking at is what we were talking about earlier, approving the track for the association use, and should any family or child not be able to afford their membership fees, we would look to sponsor.
Working. I do like the two conditions that you suggested, in that there be no non-motorized. They're not asking for that, but if you have that condition in, it's very clear. And I think at least for the time being, no music. You know, this is a 3-year lease with a 1-year extension, and if things work fine, they could come back with modifications. So
could I maybe try to talk you out of the no music? I think the concession was made that there be a single speaker and that there be music once in a while. I mean, I don't suppose I can condition it that no hip-hop. I like all other kinds of music, but I suppose that wouldn't work, would it?
No, you can't pick your music for them.
So I would just ask...
Okay.
Maybe right. That's going just a tad too far.
Okay. Well, okay. All right, so.
It was the one speaker thing that I thought would be a condition that was offered by the applicant.
Comfortable with those?
Yes, I am.
Okay. Does somebody want to make a motion? And then there was that one additional condition that staff had added. Is that right? Was there?
Yes, that was in your staff report. It was your mitigation measure revision.
Okay.
I'll go ahead and move. Okay. I move that we accept the recommendations as set forth by our staff with the condition that, what was that condition?
Non-motorized
bikes.
And one mic.
And one speaker of amplification.
Oh, I'd like to second that motion.
Can we make it as general as that without going through the resolutions, or do you want the resolutions and enumerated? Why don't you just read the resolutions?
I think we've done it before that way, just basing it on the recommendations of the staff. Through all that reading.
Yeah, just motion staff recommendation. You're fine.
Okay. All right. It's been moved and seconded. Roll call.
Commissioner Slane?
Yes.
Commissioner O'Grady?
Yes.
Commissioner Marks?
Yes.
Chairperson O'Keefe?
Yes.
4-0. Motion passes.
Okay. We'll move on to our next staff report. And thank you for all the hard work that you did in making this happen. Do you want to take a 5-minute break at this point? Anybody want to take a 5-minute break now while they're leaving? Well, because people are leaving. Well, let's do it. We're going to take a 5-minute break.
Yeah, that's fine.
Camino, U.S. Highway 101. This is the former closed, it appears to be the closed service station that's been used for auto use in the past. That use has discontinued for over a year. And what is proposed tonight is this sales, indoor auto sales, which includes motorcycles. That does require a conditional use permit, and that's why the item is before you this evening. The zoning, the general plan is downtown, and the zoning is downtown commercial. Again, this is the aerial showing the site, showing the facilities. There's the gas, and there's the old canopy for the fueling canopy, as well as the building. There was an addition, a small addition to the side that's been removed, which is part of the conditions of approval, but that's already occurred, as well as a few other improvements. This is the site as submitted by the applicant, showing that there's actually some on-site parking spaces, although on-site parking would not be required in the downtown. So that's a little bit of a benefit to the site. The existing building, which is the former garage area, which would be used as a showroom with the painted windows. There's windows in which was the former office area of the former fueling station used for retail. There was tint on the window glass that was to be removed, and that has been done. And there's an area in the back for part storage. The existing canopy exists. Much of the building has been painted. The canopy has not been painted yet, but would be painted to match the trim color, which was the dark green. There's also some planters on the site, which have been refurbished and restored, as well as there are several bollards around the perimeter of the site, probably used by former uses that occurred on site, and those have been removed or covered. These are site photos taken about a week and a half ago. The site doesn't look much different than this today. There's a few more of the bollards that have been covered or removed. They're now white with a cap on them. The building has been painted. It was a grayish-blue color. It's now a tan color with a dark green trim in this location, as well as on the windows. As I mentioned, the window tint has been removed, so anybody can view into the building and see the display, the merchandise displayed. That is, by the way, consistent in the downtown guidelines for no tint, and this clearly shows you the difference when you saw the tint before, the reason why tint is not allowed in the downtown. By removing the tint, you can view in and see the merchandise, and it makes it for a more interesting experience. The project is categorically exempt as it's an existing facility. There are findings in your staff report for approval of the conditional use permit. Staff's recommendation is to approve this conditional use permit. It is considered minor just because the building doesn't involve construction. It was just refurbishing an existing facility. And the only other bit of background I would mention is that you've heard me describe some of the improvements that have occurred prior to coming to you. And early on when the applicant discussed with staff providing the sales of merchandise and the vehicles being these refurbished motorcycles, the use of the merchandise is not an issue and could occur without the CUP, but the motorcycle sales is the part that triggers the CUP. And at that point, the applicant was eager to move forward, and at their risk of any changes, they felt that they could go forward with something.
The project is consistent with the city's appearance review manual. And I know, Mr. McCarris, you gave us a presentation last time about appearance reviews, and I wondered if you could tell us what appearance review you did for this particular project.
Sure. The presentation was, it is set up, an appearance review is set up for construction of new facilities. So this being an existing facility, what we looked at was, and we talked to the applicant about, was the potential changes that could occur without a significant investment on the applicant's part. One of the issues with the applicant was this: he was going into a one-year lease, and at that point he'd be vacating, so we weren't looking at major improvements here, as well as the type of building that's there. If the improvements become too significant, the appearance that you have there is likely to remain longer. So what could be done to dress up the existing appearance and allow the use to occur so that we have a more pleasant appearing building than we had prior to? And that consisted of color change to complement that flagstone rock that's already on the building. There is an issue with the surfacing, although it doesn't show clearly in the photograph there. There's some repair work with the asphalt in terms of the resurfacing, and that's something that the applicant is proposing to do, is resurface that blacktop. There were a number of odd bollards and pipes surrounding the site, and many of those have been removed or covered with something that's more aesthetically pleasing, which are the white posts, which I don't have photos, but are out there. You may have seen those today. The canopy hasn't been painted, but it could be repainted and will be, according to the applicant. They haven't finished that, so that's part of the proposal. That would be in the dark green. So the color selection of the dark green and the beige seem to fit well with the existing flagstone. The removal of the trim, or I'm sorry, removal of the tint on the windows, as I mentioned, that was a major issue with us right along, that it shouldn't have been tinted. And by the applicant using that area as showroom, and if you've seen it recently in the past couple of days, it's just a huge improvement over what was there and probably been there for some time. So that's something that we looked at, that you see the results of. Had this not been done, it might be even hard to imagine how much of a difference they've made in what is an existing facility. The lastly would be the landscape, that they've gone in and pruned up some of the shrubs that were overgrown and then planted and mulched those planters. They've added a couple of new pots there with plantings in them. They may be doing some more. They are present and are going to give you probably a brief explanation of what they're doing, how they're going about it, maybe the extent of their sales and their commitment to the site.
Article 13 of the zoning ordinance, specifically where it talks about downtown district, specifically mentions non-automotive uses are what are to be encouraged downtown, and I guess this seems like an automotive use to me, so I didn't know whether you had noticed that.
Sure. No, what they're really looking at, we don't want to see automotive repair type facilities out there. This is in, even if you look at it now, you'll see that this is sales of merchandise as well as sales of restored vehicles. They're actually in small quantities. There's about a dozen motorcycles, I think, at any one time that would be in there. It's a very low-volume specialty item.
The general plan, again, under downtown zone, says that development within the downtown shall be consistent with the downtown revitalization plan and support the Atascadero Main Street program.
Property. So this is really comes under the indoor auto and vehicle dealerships. If the applicant were to stop selling motorcycles and somebody else wanted to come in, they could do that because the conditional use permit goes with the property, and it wouldn't necessarily just have to be limited to motorcycles, right? And it could be other auto and vehicle dealerships that are indoors.
Yes, the key here is that it's indoors. So when we put vehicles in this particular site, we're probably talking about two large vehicles, maybe not more than that, even if they were smaller vehicles. They have to remain indoors.
And the CUP goes with the property?
That's correct.
Okay. Are there any other questions?
I saw one.
Okay.
On page 125 of the conditions of approval, there's a phase two referred to that shall be constructed within 5 years of this approval. What might that be?
Thank you for bringing that up. I forgot to mention that. That needs to be deleted. So on page 125, condition four, the second half of that, which is, looks like it's the third sentence, we'd need to strike that complete sentence referring to any phase two expansion.
Seeing no other questions, I'll open it up to the applicant.
Actually, I do have a question.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry.
I assume since selling vehicles that customers will have to test drive. My understanding is they're off-road motorcycles. How is that going to happen?
I'll in part answer that, and then I know the applicant is prepared to address that as well. Okay. As I'm not as familiar with some of the laws pertaining to selling and then test driving these vehicles. But my understanding is the vehicles are enduros, although there may be dirt bikes. So the more I think about it, I think I'm going to defer that to the applicant in terms of what happens if somebody wants to test drive a vehicle.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, any other questions to staff? Seeing none, I'll open it up to the applicant. Would you please state your name?
Yeah, my name is Kevin Gogstetter, and I live at 2470 Homestead. And to answer your question about test driving of the motorcycles, Steve already mentioned that there's not a lot of motorcycles there, and the motorcycles that will be there are going to be specialty bikes. So the people that are looking at these bikes know exactly what they're coming for. And if there was an enduro or a dirt bike that was amongst one of these specialty bikes, you can't ride an OHV bicycle on the street or anywhere near the shop. It's against the law, and I would abide by all the laws, of course, of the city and the state. So any test driving of these vehicles would have to be done after they purchased the vehicle at an OHV. So, and the vehicle would have to be green stickered, and they would have to do this in an area that it was allowed. Test driving of any of these vehicles by these people would be done only by licensed motorcycle. Good to the people that are occupying the hotel across the street, as well as all the merchants and patrons along that area. And if you have any other questions, I'd be willing to answer them as well.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Hoxeter. I assume that a customer is going to start up one of the bikes and rev it. That will be noise production. The hotel, as I understand, is in a fairly sensitive noise area. Do you have some?
Yeah, it is in a sensitive noise area. I only specialize in Japanese motorcycles. I don't have American motorcycles currently. At this time, there is a bit of a following across the street at certain times on the weekend and sometimes during events that are louder motorcycles than I have. I abide by all noise ordinances, and the motorcycles that I have are not loud. They're not louder than any of the cars that we drive. I don't wrap these out. I try and most of the work I do, my bikes are running. So I'm not wrenching on bikes there constantly. And like I said, the people that are interested in the bikes that I'm selling know what they're buying.
Okay. Thank you.
Absolutely.
Are there any other questions? Do you have any other comments? Okay. Thank you. Is there anybody else in the public who wants to talk on this? Please state your name.
My name is Chuck Ward. I live in Atascadero. Madam Chairperson, members of the Planning Commission, and neighbors, I'm here tonight to speak in opposition to this conditional use permit, and I'd like to tell you why. I went down to City Hall and I read in detail the staff report, and I'm shocked to see that the staff is recommending this, particularly since in Section 2, Item 4, and I'll read it, that the proposed project or use not be inconsistent, pardon me, with the character or the immediate neighborhood or contrary to its orderly development. The immediate neighborhood is the crown jewel of the city, the Carlton Hotel. It is inconceivable that anybody can think that that abandoned gas station and what's going to be there is consistent with the neighborhood. And what about the orderly development projects? This city has just approved a marvelous program. I got it right here, the Streetscape Project. Millions of dollars are going to be spent, taxpayer dollars. I'm reminded of a movie I saw many years ago. There was a scene in a bucket shop where they were trying to motivate a group of salesmen to go out and sell a terrible project. Ben Affleck was giving a motivational talk to these salespeople as they were going out the door. And he said, "Gentlemen, let's put some lipstick on this pig. If you folks approve this tonight, you're putting lipstick on this pig. And pardon the pun, but I think you're just going to be giving lip service to this whole downtown beautification project." I might be the only voice here tonight, and I'll tell you why. Just by accident, I saw this yellow piece of paper outside that project. I stopped and looked at it. I went down to City Hall. I can tell you this. I talked to a couple of people about it, and they were shocked. And I said, "What do you think the voters in this city would say?" And one of them said at least 95% would be against it if they knew about it. So I'm here tonight to add my voice to all those people who, if they knew about this, would be here and would be as outraged as I am. I know you folks on the Planning Commission only want the best for the city. You've approved some wonderful projects. There's a lot of positive stuff going on. I hope you have the courage to disapprove this project because it's inconsistent with all the good stuff that's going on. I thank you for your consideration and for listening to my view.
Thank you, sir. Is there anybody else from the public that wants to speak on this? Please come up to the podium.
My name is Pat Gaughan. I'm the owner of the property we're speaking about. I applied for a conditional use permit a quarter of a century ago and was granted. I haven't had any objections over the last 25 years about being there, although I asked the city in a couple instances to give me a hand on my tenants. And to clean up the corner, I had to do it myself. But the city could not give me any help. I had to do it all by myself. I've had accolades from the county, Chamber of Commerce, Tascadero City Council, and no one's ever given me any objection in 25 years. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Is there anybody else?
Hi, I'm Karen Gogstetter. I live at 2470 Homestead Road. And we would like to open a business at the location. I just wanted to address a couple of questions, and that is about the early morning hours, and we will not be there before 10 o'clock. We don't plan.
Good evening. Jamie Kirk, 9720 Atascadero Avenue. I was a former city employee, and I worked at the city at the time that we were developing the downtown revitalization plan as well as the current guidelines, zoning standards that you have for the downtown, and participated in developing the types of uses that were, that at least at that time, the group looked at wanting to have in the downtown, and they wanted a variety of uses. And whenever we talked about this specific use, about the indoor auto sales, one of the tenants were, and we were thinking at that time, what if the Harley dealership wanted to move downtown? So it was definitely the motorcycle type uses wasn't something that was overlooked. It was something that was considered and talked about during that time. So I think this is an appropriate use. One of the former speakers said that that the use is not consistent with the character of the neighborhood. I think what he was speaking to is maybe the building itself. You know, the building is what it is. And I think driving through town, I saw the use the other day, just happened to glance at it as I was coming into town and noticed that it was an upgrade, something better than the previous use that was there. And it caught my eye. I appreciated it, and I appreciate what they've done to the building. And I hope you will approve this, and I wish them luck on their business.
Thank you. Is there anybody else that wants to speak? Seeing none, I'll close it and bring it back to the commissioners for discussion and a vote. Go ahead.
I personally would rather see a business coming in there than it just staying there vacant on a corner, gathering trash, weeds, and whatever. So I'm in favor of having the approval on this.
Any of the other commissioners have any comments? Go ahead.
I can't think of either a building or a use that is more inimical to potential investors and developers in Atascadero than this. We have to raise the bar here in Atascadero, and that's what I thought the downtown vision was all about in the downtown redevelopment plan. So I just can't get past that. We have, tens of millions of dollar hotel Carlton investment across the street, and other developers are making significant investments in the downtown area as well as all of us taxpayers. And in my opinion, this doesn't come close to the kind measuring up to those kinds of standards that we've been raising here in Atascadero recently.
This doesn't prevent anybody from coming in and purchasing the property and put on there what he wants. I think this is taking care of the property at this point. Whether the owner of the property would keep the trash or the weeds down or whatever, I think the new business partner, the person that's coming in to start the new business, is going to maintain it, is going to look good. Yes, we need to develop downtown, but during that interim, until somebody comes in to purchase that property, I think it's a...
I really like the improvements that I see there, and removing that tinting, I think has made a significant difference. I'm hoping that with those improvements that somebody will come along and want to rent the building and use it for something that really fits in better with the idea of a retail downtown. I cannot make the finding that it fits in with the immediate neighborhood, the downtown neighborhood, nor does it fit in with the general plan goals for the downtown. So for those reasons, I would not be able to approve this conditional use permit. With that said, does somebody want to make a motion?
Madam Chair, just
yes.
Before we get a motion, just keep in mind, because it's a conditional use permit, we'll have to make at least one finding of denial in your motion.
Right, and I addressed that one, which was number 4, that I could not make the...
I just want to make sure it's clearly stated for the record.
Right, okay. And nor can I make the finding that it's consistent with the general plan. Okay, go ahead. You can go ahead.
Okay, I'd like to make a motion to deny the project for the reasons stated by Chairperson O'Keefe, namely that it is inconsistent with the provisions of the general plan and is also not in character with the neighborhood.
I'll second that. Roll call, please.
Commissioner O'Grady?
Yes.
Commissioner Slane?
No.
Commissioner Marks?
Over the years, use of dirt bikes in neighborhoods has had such a negative impact on my family that at this point I don't think I can evaluate this agenda item without substantial negative bias, and I think I must abstain from voting.
Chairperson O'Keefe?
Yes.
You voted yes?
To deny
oh.
it.
Okay. I'm sorry.
I know that sounds like a negative, but...
Yes. Okay, 2-1 motion passes.
Okay. And our next item is a general plan amendment. This is at 13-13000 Atascadero Avenue. It's known as the Eagle Creek Golf Course.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the Commission. This item tonight before us is, as you mentioned, a general plan amendment. It's also a zone change for the area and an amendment of an existing master plan of development for the site. Just a little orientation on the location of the site. This is the site here. It's the, I guess, former location of the Eagle Creek golf course. You can see the golf course a couple years ago when it was still being irrigated and maintained right here, no longer being filled. You can see the location of the golf course. One thing to note is portions of the golf course, these green areas, were located on portions of the individual lots within the project. There were easements that allowed the golf course and some of its facilities to exist along the lot. So you'll see most of the lots that have frontage around the golf course had golf course improvements across those lots. This is the clubhouse right here with its parking lot and driveway. Then there was a support shop building located here. In terms of the general plan land use, there's three different land use designations currently within the site. The houses on the cul-de-sac are under the single-family residential X designation, which is the half-acre single-family zone. The houses in this area were under the single-family one-acre zone, and the golf course was under what was called the commercial recreation general plan designation. Zoning-wise, we had the corresponding single-family zonings for the residential areas. The golf course had a zone called LS, which is special recreation. And then on top of the entire project was a plan development number 8 overlay. So everything within this project area, regardless of its underlying zoning, was covered by the plan development 8 zone. As I mentioned, Paloma Creek flows through the site. There's actually two tributaries that come together and then flow north through the site. There's also a fairly large associated floodplain that is in this area. The majority of the golf course is within the floodplain for Paloma Creek. A little bit of project history here. In 1991, the Plan Development 8 was created and the site was rezoned. At that time, it was rezoned to allow a golf course with a driving range and 13 houses. In 1998, the plan development number 8 was amended, changing the rules to allow access to the golf club off of Atascadero Road. Originally, it was to take access from Santa Barbara Road. In 2000, PD8 was amended again to eliminate the driving range and allow the four houses on Atascadero Road. 2005, approximately, the golf course was closed and ceased to be maintained. At that point, the applicant submitted an application to the City of Atascadero to change the general plan to allow new uses there. We brought that to the City Council and Planning Commission in a joint session in 2006 to get some direction on whether the general plan amendment concept was consistent enough that the council would allow that to move forward. At the time, the idea was to change the golf course into a youth sports field. The City Council, based on testimony from the public, determined that was too intensive of a use and basically referred it back to the applicant to come up with a new concept. In 2007, March of this year, the applicant returned to the City Council with a new concept, which is basically the concept that's before us tonight, which is to convert the two golf buildings into single-family residences and then do a restoration of the golf course into a more native landscape to help units on separate lots. So there's a one-acre lot here known as Parcel 2 for this unit. Then the remainder of the site, which is about 9 acres, would be a single lot with the golf clubhouse converted into a house on that lot. The remainder of the site is what used to be the golf course. There would be an open space easement in this kind of dashed green area. That area would be restored with the new native landscaping, recontouring, that sort of thing. And then the open space easement would preserve that as an open space area in perpetuity. There's an existing golf course shop building that's located out here that would remain as is and be available for use by the owner of the property. This is a picture a couple months ago of the golf clubhouse, of basically what it looks like today. They would infill an opening, a breezeway between this building and this building to create basically one large house. A lot of the driveway areas, parking lot areas, ramps, and that sort of thing would be removed as part of the project and converted back into just single-family driveways and garages. This is the shop building along Atascadero Road. Although it looks like a single-family house, it is an empty shell. There was never any rooms, plumbing, or anything inside it. It was just used as basically a storage building for the golf course. So the proposal would be to come back and convert the inside of it into a single-family residence with utilities and bathrooms and all those sorts of things. This is the shop building that's out by the highway that would be on Parcel 2. In terms of the landscape restoration plan, the applicants hired both a biologist and a landscape architect to come up with a restoration concept that's included in your staff report, and I believe they're both here tonight to probably go into that in more detail, so I'll leave it up to them to discuss it. But the concept is to use native plants, trees, shrubs to create a native, sustainable landscape that could naturalize in this location and be compatible with the creek. This is a picture a couple months ago of just what the golf course area looks like. You can see, you know, without the irrigation, the grass has pretty much gone away. There's a number of non-native trees that may need to be replaced. Some of the redwoods have died, so we'll work with a landscape architect to remove those trees that just aren't going to survive in more of a natural state. One of the issues on a plan development is that it has to provide a project benefit. This is a project outside the urban core. Typically, those types of projects, the benefits are some sort of an open space or recreational benefit. This was discussed when we brought this concept to the council in March. It's staff's understanding that the restoration of the golf course as a natural open space was a satisfactory benefit of this project. Project fencing. Originally, the project had this white rail fencing throughout the project area. And once the golf course was closed, the applicant did install a temporary pipe rail and wire fence. There were some liability issues with the lake that needed to be dealt with, and that was the purpose of this fence. That is considered a temporary fence. The applicant intends to remove that fence and then replace any areas that need to be fenced with the white rail fence so that there's consistent fencing throughout the project. This is a location along the back put onto septic. We do have a fork of Paloma Creek right here. All the septic leach fields and their expansion areas would be 100 feet from the creek, so that would be consistent with our plumbing code and the regional water quality control basin plan for setbacks. Another just issue that's going on in the area, the Public Works Department's looking at long-term improvements to Santa Barbara Road interchange. The concept we're looking at is the installation of roundabouts at the ramp heads to basically expand the usefulness and life of the interchange. The roundabouts take up a lot more space than the current intersections do, so we're going to need to acquire additional right-of-way beyond what we have today. We are requesting a condition that this corner of the property, which is basically just the edge of the golf course, be provided as a right-of-way dedication. So when we need to build this interchange, we'll have adequate right-of-way on this side to accommodate it. This is the overall tentative map, so you can just kind of see where the right-of-way dedication would be. It's basically in the area of the open space. The plan development, as I mentioned, is Plan Development 8. It was originally adopted in 1991. One of the things we need to do tonight is to amend not only the map but also the code text. We're recommending that a number of the uses that were listed originally be dropped, crop production and grazing, farm animal raising, agricultural accessory uses, and outdoor recreation, which was the golf course. We're recommending that those be dropped. Also, E talked about expanding the golf course and requiring a traffic study. That's no longer required, so we're recommending we drop that. We are recommending adding an additional requirement that just basically clarifies that the open space easement on Lot 1 has to stay there in perpetuity and is required to be maintained in good condition, and that no structures, vehicles, equipment, livestock, or other material shall be placed or used or stored within that easement, and that the property owner of that lot would be responsible for the maintenance of the landscape. I believe the applicant does have some concerns with the dropping of some of the crop production and farm animal uses. Staff's just looking at, though, based on the size of the site, the proximity of the creek, it doesn't seem like agriculture uses really are going to be appropriate, especially with a large open space lot. Could clearly change the restoration project if all of a sudden a number of large livestock animals were allowed on there. So I think that would be an issue that we'll have some discussion about. In terms of the general plan amendments to the map, this is the area that we're looking to amend. So we're recommending we change the general plan land use from the commercial rec to the single-family residential Y zone, which is a one-acre minimum. The PD, though, clarifies that that lot, even though it's over 1 acre, cannot be further subdivided. The zoning will be changed from LS to RSFY, which is a single-family one-acre zone. PD 8 will remain. There's also a flood hazard over the property that will remain as well. So in terms of recommendations, there is actually 6 changed the PD 8 code text. The 4th would be recommending changing the zoning map. The 5th would be adopting the new CUP, which would be for the master plan of development, which would lock in all the architecture and site features. And then the 6th would be a recommendation on the vesting map, which would create the subdivision, creating the 2 separate lots. As I said, the applicant I know has got a couple consultants that are here to make a presentation as well, and staff's available to answer any questions you might have.
Are there any questions of staff? Go ahead.
On page 142, you referred to the addition of the language for the open space easement as part of the PD overlay. This is a sizable amount of property, and I'm interested in learning more about the details of the maintenance, both short-term and long-term, that would be needed to maintain that. And I understand you alluded to a presentation later by the applicant And so perhaps that's where I would get that information. But if you wanted to add anything at this time.
Yeah, I would let the applicant maybe make their presentation. Staff's had some discussion. We talked about easement language and deed notification, just so that whoever the owner is clearly aware of the responsibilities they have. And then if you still have questions, we could try to wrap those up later.
Okay. You mentioned it was staff's understanding about the council's position that the open space restoration element was considered the benefit to the project. Your staff report lists both the Tier 1 benefits, which the Tier 1 being the natural open space preservation benefit, and in Tier 2 there are three others listed, including multi-purpose trails, equestrian and bicycle, pedestrian. Because I saw that reference in there to the staff's understanding, I spoke with one city council person, and at least it was that person's understanding that Tier 2 benefits were not necessarily to be ignored or excluded. What are the rules for approvals of PDs? Don't they have to have at least one of the Tier 2 benefits ordinarily?
Staff's understanding of the council policy that the Tier 1 benefits are mandatory. You have to provide those. The Tier 2 benefits are additional benefits that are desirable, but they're not necessarily required. So where there's an opportunity to provide those, it makes sense. Where a project doesn't have the opportunity to provide them, then they aren't viewed, I guess, necessarily as a negative if you can't provide them.
Okay. And then oftentimes you include in the staff report,
which then creates a monthly assessment to pay for police and fire emergency service personnel. On this project, staff is recommending that we don't add this condition to the project. The reason being is because this is a small portion of a larger project. Staff is concerned that we may have some equity issues if only two lots in a larger subdivision of 17 units are paying an assessment that the rest of them aren't. Also, just due to the size, two units, it's a substantial fee just to create the assessment district, and there's some substantial fees from the city to maintain the assessments on an annual basis. So it doesn't seem like it would be appropriate, or there seems like there's some significant drawbacks to requiring it, and that's why staff's not recommending that condition, but it's clearly up to the commission whether or not you would want to make that recommendation to the council.
Okay. Are there any other? Okay. I'll open it up to the applicant.
Thank you. My name is Jamie Kirk, resident of Atascadero, and I am the planning representative for the project this evening. I wanted to start by letting you know the other consultants that are in the audience. We have Lindy Aldhouse from Aldhouse and Mead. She was our project biologist. We also have Casey Patterson, who was our landscape architect, and Ken Chacon, who was our project engineer. Thank you. And I'll start with a brief presentation and then have all of us available for questions at the conclusion. As Warren showed in his presentation, this is an approximately 10-acre site previously operated as Eagle Creek Golf Course. The golf course closed in the spring of 2005. We had submitted an application for potential reuse of the property in September of 2005. Since we have submitted that application, we've had two city council study sessions and four neighborhood meetings. All of those charged with trying to come up with a project that was suitable from a planning perspective as well as a neighborhood perspective for the reuse of this property. We started with a study session in March of 2006, incorporating two standalone single-family dwellings
and a youth recreational field. Based on community input at that meeting, the council determined that the proposal was maybe not the most appropriate use on the site and a little too intensive for what the neighborhood was looking for, and they requested that we bring back at a future study session additional alternatives. So we put on our thinking caps and sat on it for a bit and came back with another project, which was scheduled for a joint study session in March 2000. That should be 2007. At that study session, I believe there was another item on the agenda. I think it was the Veterans Memorial, and there was a lot of discussion. Our item was continued. We had the opportunity to spend some time with some neighbors out in the foyer. And talking with the neighbors, we decided before we came back to the next city council studies given to us that the neighbors at that meeting was for the project to move forward with a two-lot subdivision, allowing, with the thought that allowing an additional house would assist in funding many of the items that the neighborhood were requesting so we could look at it cooperatively. We brought that to the city council at the next study session, April 10th, and our project at that point was to amend the master plan of development. This was a concept plan. Start with that. Amending the master plan of development and a parcel map with two single-family residences on individual lots. And we had some basic concept ideas on restoration and an open space easement. The neighborhood came together. They formulated a neighborhood statement. And what they asked at that study session is that the city council authorize staff to proceed with this project, but as we move through the process is to look at these items. And these items included returning the previous golf course area to a natural state, filling in the lake and removing dead vegetation, planting native trees such as oaks, keeping the existing healthy trees such as the willows. The willows we'll talk about, I think Lindy may talk about them in detail later. We went back and forth on which willows would remain, which ones would stay. They also wanted to recontour the topography and wanted us to replace the temporary fencing that Warren showed in his slide, clean up the creek area, and ensure that the future project is compatible with the existing CC&Rs. So after that, we had a few more neighborhood meetings, two neighborhood meetings to really collaborate between our project team, the property owner, and the neighbors. Based on the two neighborhood workshops in April and in May, we submitted a revised application to the city, and that is the proposal that Warren ran through, and I'll just jump on. He showed you the parcel map, a one-acre parcel and an approximately nine-acre parcel, both with single-family residences. These are elevations showing the proposed changes that would bring together the two standalone buildings into a single-family dwelling, approximately 3,500 square feet. And again, doing some interior improvements to the maintenance building. There will be changes to the outside incorporated for landscaping, but as far as the exterior appearance of the building, that will remain the same. There will be improvements to the interior for a three-bedroom house. The plan also includes a grading and drainage plan prepared by KC Design Group. The grading includes recontouring of the topography to a more natural form, removal of the dead trees and some of the willow trees, filling in the existing lake, and removal of the existing golf course parking lot and infrastructure. We also presented a fencing plan in response to the neighbors concerned. And again, the restoration landscape plan. This is what a lot of the discussion focused on, is what this area would look like. We worked with Casey Patterson, our landscape architect, as well as Lindy Althaus, our biologist, to make sure we came up with an aesthetically pleasing palette as well as a palette that's going to survive, and looked at native plants. Because we didn't want to have something, especially the gateway coming into Atascadero, that was non-native vegetation. So Lindy recommended all those issues. We also did propose a landscape plan for proposed parcel 2, just because the landscape has been neglected since the use of the golf course has gone away, so we wanted to make sure that there's some curb appeal and so that's consistent with the rest of the houses as you walk down the street. We are proposing to record an open space easement over a portion of parcel one, and that open space easement will preclude the future subdivisions and recreational and commercial uses of the property. The open space easement, we would expect that would be required to record with the final map. And we are allowing limited private access through the open space easement. You'll see on the plans there is a access road that goes adjacent to the lots that abut the parcel, and that's for immediate neighbors if they need to access the rear portion of their parcels. We've written in the ability for them to have limited access. And highlighted here, see if I can. Here's the road area that I was talking about. So the parcels that abut the road will have the ability to access, and then the area highlighted in green is the open space area. As far as maintenance, the private easements that were once the private golf course easements, they have been deeded back to the original owner, so those areas will be required to be maintained by the individual lot owners. We have worked with each neighbor individually to address the preference for the existing golf course improvements on their property, whether they be removed or retained. So that's on a lot-by-lot basis. And the landscaping and maintenance of the open space area will be the responsibility of the owner of lot one. And one of the questions that we had as we were reviewing the staff report is what, if any, use restrictions should be placed on the Eagle Creek residences. Currently, the PD8 applies to all of the houses out on the site, as well as the property under consideration tonight. And those uses include single-family dwelling, residential accessory uses, farm animal raising, crop production and grazing, temporary dwelling, pipelines, home occupation, and ag accessory uses, along with the recreational uses that pertain to the golf course. And we're completely in support of removing the recreational uses. However, we don't support taking out the rest of the uses that are typically allowed in a residential single-family district, because those uses, the other property owners currently have the ability to have those uses, and we don't want our project to move forward as a catalyst to take away existing rights that they have on their property. The city has also requested for us to dedicate a 60 foot of the northeastern corner of the proposed parcel one to accommodate a roundabout. The staff report indicated that the city is currently studying the feasibility of the roundabout, and we would just request that the right-of-way acquisition, at this point, it's premature, and that it come forward at such a time whenever we have a definitive project. I don't know that this roundabout plan has been adopted by city council or is at a point to where it's a concrete plan, so we think that request is premature and should come at such time that there is a... these are all on page 230, remove condition 16, which is the requirement for the offer of dedication for the right-of-way. And then those same changes just transcend to page 249, similar conditions, just different pages and numbering. With that, I will conclude my presentation and just ask that the Planning Commission recommend approval of the project to the City Council, because we think we've been successful taking direction from the City Council and working with the neighbors over the last 4 or 5 months on bringing this project forward. And I thank you for your time. I'm available for questions. And as I said in my opening, we have many other experts here to answer specific questions also.
Are there any questions of Ms. Kirk? I have a comment.
Yes.
When I was out on site with you, I discussed that there was no maintenance plan. Now, I'm not talking about after the plants are established. I'm talking about a maintenance plan when the plants are put in, you know, and how long it will be maintained. You sent me the word document, but that had nothing. That was just a description of the open space easement. Now, I did have to read it rather hurriedly, but I did not see anything in there regarding a time period.
And I thank you for mentioning it, because after we talked, I went back and looked at it. And that's just kind of an example we gave for it of how the open space agreement can work. It's not in a final form. So if there's some suggestions of things you'd like to have added, you know, I would think with your counsel, with some of your actions tonight, include in your motion things that should be included in that agreement. And one of those would be maintenance of the plantings for irrigation. We had talked about the irrigation needing to be in for 3 to 5 years. Internally, we know that as the project team, because we've been working on that, but that would be a good thing for you to include in your discussions tonight.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Could we have the biologist and because I do have some questions.
Good evening. I'm Lindy Althaus, project biologist. And Casey Patterson had just developed the plans based on some of our recommendations and some of the community input, so we should probably stand up here together.
Casey, okay. Patterson, landscape architect, CJP Productions. I live in Atascadero.
Did you want to make a presentation, or do you just want to take questions from us?
Well, I'd like to describe at least my aspect of the design so you understand what was happening. Basically, it's if you look at the site, trying to create a nice vista coming off of Santa Barbara Road when you look into the site, if you can get the landscape plan up. Right there. Looking down from Santa Barbara in this view is creating a kind of a meadow look, and then framing that view with tree massing on either side. The tree massing on this plan on the right-hand side, which fronts the freeway, would be fairly thick to provide screening from the houses up on the hill. That is mostly what it's intended for, but it would also do the it'd still look out at that buffer to the that fronts along the freeway. There is some grading issues as it relates to landscaping. We have to cut the slope back to get the access road in. That would be part of the landscape plans. There is also a intended in the middle is a bioswale, and that was, I don't know if we still need that or not. That was on my original plan, but that's something we need to talk about, or you've decided on that. So that's the concept of the landscape plan. If you want to talk about the plants, per se.
Did you have a specific question before I talk about a couple of issues?
Yes. With regard to animals for vegetation control, what are you thinking about?
Anytime you have a drainage way or a riparian zone, it's not advisable to have a confined animal facility. So I agree with not having livestock on site most of the time, but there are times when it's appropriate to use livestock rather than try to mow everything.
Okay, but my question is, what kind of livestock? Are you talking about cows or goats or sheep?
That's a very good question, and it depends ultimately on what's growing out there. And 30 head of cattle for one day could do a lot of eating, or 30 head of goats for 2 days could do a lot of eating. And I'm not talking about a lot of cows or a lot of goats for a long period of time. It would be pulse grazing. That would be the only type of grazing that I would recommend for this site, not to have livestock stored on site.
Okay, that...
So how do you
implementing something like that, you know, making the arrangements with somebody who has 30 head of cattle to bring them in, the logistics are pretty difficult as I see it.
I agree. They are difficult, but we have done that on restoration projects on very small acreages when we're dealing with two or three acres.
Yeah, well, okay. Then the other thing is, for me, one of the values of open space is for habitat, and that includes the critters. Now, if this is going to be fenced, you're keeping the critters out, or you're making it more difficult for them to get in. I can see along the freeway side, but this doesn't fit in with my idea of open space.
So open space, in your mind, is for large mammals, for deer and bobcats and mountain lions and things that require large openings and fences. You can have fox-friendly and coyote-friendly fencing that is open at the bottom of the fencing, so you could recommend that these structures allow for those kinds of animals.
Well, how high would the fencing be? That's probably the key issue.
Correct. If the bottom of the fence is 6 inches off the ground, that will allow canids to go underneath the fence. So you could have red fox and coyotes moving through, and even bobcats can get under those openings. Deer can hop over the fence that is indicated, those little white fences that are there.
So what's the height you're talking about?
For the height of a fence?
Okay, that's okay, because I've seen,
correct,
in my neighborhood, I have seen deer, when the fencing is this high, they break their neck.
Oh, I haven't seen that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's an important concept.
I'm afraid that what I would like to see is more emphasis on the valley oak and in the sites where maybe some blue oak can go. And then I noticed the madrone. I haven't seen many madrone in those areas. And
madrone is a lovely tree that
is beautiful,
a nice complement, only in small proportions. And I completely agree with you about the valleys and the blues. Those are the white oak species that are the most dominant characteristic of the landscape as you drop over the Cuesta Grade. And the valley oak has the huge stature that we so enjoy, particularly in the Paloma Creek drainage way. So I would agree that that would be an appropriate tree to focus on, with the blue oaks on the hillier sides. The valley oaks really grow well in that floodplain area, and that's the right place to plant them.
Okay, so a de-emphasis on the coast live oak and more emphasis on the species that we need for regeneration.
That is correct. And in that vein, there was some discussion at the public meetings that I went to, the community meetings, that they wanted evergreens included in that palette, because during the winter time, our white oaks, the blues, and the valleys are deciduous and don't provide the visual protection that the dense foliage of the coast live oaks, the madrones, and the bay trees provide. So that was part of the reason that those trees were incorporated. If it was my personal vision, it would have just been the deciduous trees, but their input was incorporated into the plant palette.
Okay.
But may I also add, there's the note that Jamie made about willows. I wanted to clarify. I am a big willow hugger. And the willows that were indicated on the plant are the non-native weeping willow trees. So those are the trees that I particularly focused on, and there's one that may stay, and that's dependent on the grading plan, maybe two, but there is a couple that have sprouted up right in the riparian zone in the native area, and those have to go because they do compete with the native vegetation.
I did have one other question. What's your recommendation for a maintenance to get these the vegetation that would be planted established?
A minimum of 5 years.
A minimum of 5 years.
Of maintenance, and that includes watering and weeding.
Okay.
And financial assurances that the maintenance would be achieved.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Other questions? Did you have a presentation you wanted to make after all my questions?
I do not have a presentation.
Okay, thank you.
I had a...
Oh, you did?
Yes. I don't feel like I can sit here and design the appropriate maintenance necessary for the open space easement to thrive. So... how do we get some assurances?
You request a maintenance and management plan be prepared and approved by the city.
Maintenance is kept up. I've done it down there. I did it down there in San Luis, and they annually check it and then come in and do check it out the year. If they like it, then they extend it out a year. If you didn't, you got to replace some plants and keep it up at that point, on an annual basis. Okay. So we could probably do that some kind of agreement that I think we'll put together. We can have the biologist check it, you know, whenever she feels it's necessary to make sure everything's being kept up, and then and have a bond in place. If it doesn't, you know, if it isn't kept up or if someone doesn't do it, then we can utilize that bond to make sure it does get kept up. So.
Okay, thank you. Is there anybody else from the public that would like to speak on this?
Thank you, Chairperson O'Keefe and Planning Commission. My name is Doug Pirto. I'm a professor and department head at Cal Poly, and my neighbors have blessed me once again to be their representative. So I'm speaking for 17 homeowners in the Eagle Creek area. We've met, like has been illustrated tonight or described tonight, four different times or several different times, and we've had our own interactions. And so I'm praying now that I can adequately represent their viewpoints. There has been significant discussion about this golf course area. We all bought our homes in there with the idea that we would have a golf course there, and then to watch the golf course go the way it has, it's been very distressing. And so we're very concerned about the aesthetics. We're very concerned about maintaining it in some kind of an open space condition. We're very concerned about the feasibility in relationship to being able to get the area restored. These kinds of things have and were discussed before the City Council. I testified in their behalf in April. And we stated then that we have high hopes, and we were very impressed that Mr. Gearhart and his associates were discussing their plans with us. We talked about the current conditions. We talked about our concerns, as I've started to illustrate to you today. We talked about proposed projects and alternatives to the project, and we talked about how we would be affected. In the public meeting before the Atascadero City Council, I testified on behalf of my neighbors by saying that whatever we decide on, it needs to be economically viable. Otherwise, we're not going to get any restoration done there. That we're focused on restoration. We want that golf course eliminated. If we're not going to maintain it as a golf course, then let's get rid of it and let's make sure that we have a site that's appropriate for a gateway of Atascadero. We have CCNRs with the homes that we have there now. We would hope that those CCRs, at least in some condition, be proposed for the two new sites that are being put in there. We like the idea of two houses. Again, that goes back to the issue of economic viability. We advocated then in April that a restoration plan be developed, and it's nice to see they're not getting a soccer field or a football field there now. We like this basic idea of getting an open space and two homes. Our neighbors last night at the public meeting that we had agree on the following. We agree with the mitigated declaration. We agree with the zoning change. We agree that there should be a grading plan and that it should be restored to natural grade. We like the idea that that old dry lake bed be filled in and as made a part of the natural grade condition there. In general, all golf course features will be eliminated, but that's dependent upon how the individual landowners want the back of their properties dealt with. And we like the idea that Mr. Gearhart and associates have been talking specifically with the individual owners to make sure that all is agreed to with reference to where we go in the future. We don't like that metal fence in the current state of affairs in terms of how that looks. It's got to change, and it's got to change fairly quickly in terms of the effect on our property values. We like the idea that a white rail fence be put in, and I'll talk to you a little bit more about that when I get down to some of my concerns. The rehabilitation plan, Chairperson O'Keefe, we agree with you. There needs to be a specific plan, and there needs to be a maintenance plan, and I have some concerns about that that I'll share with you in a minute. The service road seems like a good idea. Fire needs access back there, and the property owner is going to need access to gain access to do the maintenance work and additional work that's necessary, and particularly Well, that's enough said there.
Mr. Pierrotto, your time is up, so how much longer is it going to take?
Well, given that I'm speaking for all the landowners, can you just give me a couple more minutes here?
Yeah. Are there any other people that want to speak? Okay, go ahead.
All right. I apologize for that. I'll get to the punchline here in a second. We don't have any objection. I want you to fully hear what we've talked about, and this is a big proposal, so let me just keep continuing here. We agree that there doesn't seem to be too much concern on the city roundabout that's being proposed, but we would like to know what is planned in more detail as that work is moving forward. We agree on the CCRs being similar to what we would like, what we already have for our current homes, and we like the idea that Mr. Gearhart has had good discussion with us. Now, specifically our concerns, and we talked about these last night, we'd like to be sure that this moves forward in a timely manner. I ask, in behalf of my neighbors, that we think appropriately in terms of the rehab plan, in terms of planting density, in terms of the hazard of any vegetation that we put back in there in relationship to fire hazard. We think about that vegetation in terms of the cost and its long-term maintenance needs. We think about native vegetation, and Chairperson O'Keefe, we agree with you that Valley Oak and the blue oaks would be the first species that we would want to put back in there, because the Valley Oaks are doing quite well in my own backyard on my lot. Screening where appropriate, but yet not a fire hazard. So fire hazard has to be part of this rehab plan and also part of the maintenance plan. The fence along Santa Barbara Road is coming down. I don't know if you've looked at it, but if you lean on it, it's going to fall down in various places. So either we take it out or we maintain it. So some of those posts are going to have to be replaced. Fence rails themselves are going to have to be replaced. For you, seems to be the most feasible alternative to restore the property to an open and aesthetically pleasing and attractive site. Please help us get a timely decision. Please help us to get the permits in place to do the work in a timely manner. Let's show some flexibility, both in terms of the initial planning and the maintenance, so that we can get the kinds of conditions out there that we want while having a good idea of what it is we do want out there. And let's work together, and let's work with Mr. Gearhart to get this area restored, this gateway to Atascadero.
I have a question. You said something about metal fencing.
Yes.
What is that?
That's the current fencing that's there now.
Where is that metal fencing?
All around the site.
What I saw was some wood fencing, but then there's this metal fencing.
What I'm talking about. It's about six feet high, and it was put in for liability purposes. And I don't blame Mr. Gearhart for doing that, because there were insurance reasons why he needed to do that. But we don't want it to stay in there in the future.
Okay. And do you have any problem with the kind of fencing that does allow the animals, such as was proposed?
We have right now. We would hope that the fencing be consistent with the fencing we presently have, which is a three-rail white fence. And I think in most cases that existing fence will be wildlife-friendly, but there may be a few modifications that are necessary. But I think the current fencing... Okay. But it's got to be maintained. You know, that fencing, too, isn't going to last forever. Those posts and those rails go to, you know, they deteriorate fairly quickly. So that's an issue, too, particularly with reference to the future and also with reference to the existing fence that's there.
Okay, I have one more question. You made a comment about you didn't want any, you were concerned about fire hazard. Is there anything wrong with the vegetation plan that they have proposed where you see that there could be a fire hazard?
Well, Chairperson O'Keefe, I haven't seen the specifics about how closely they're going to plant the vegetation. Like if you start planting Valley Oak 5 feet apart and then you put an understory set of vegetation in there and freeway traffic comes by and throws it.
I don't think that's it. You're not going to have healthy trees if you do that.
Exactly. And okay. I talked to the landscape architects last night and presented that point of view that you're going to have to space that vegetation appropriately to give for aesthetics, for individual plant health and also thinking about some fire hazard concerns.
I think they've done other rehabilitation plans, so those rehabilitation plans typically take into consideration future fire hazard.
Yeah,
so
that's what we're asking for.
I think that we can trust them on that. And you have a question.
Mr. Pirto, did I pronounce that correctly?
Perfectly, just like they would say it in Finland.
City staff's opinion is that livestock or the conditions of use should be amended to prohibit livestock. And Ms. Kirk spoke about the neighbors.
Asking about the open space, he was talking about on the individual property owner's lots about the livestock. Is that correct?
Yeah, yes. Do you or any of your neighbors have any objections to deleting the use of livestock on your property? In other words, if we leave it, then you could have it, and your next door neighbor may not want it. So could you help give the commission some direction on that?
We never talked about that particularly. I think we all felt that the way it was originally proposed, where some livestock would be permitted as long as it's carefully controlled. I think that's where the neighborhood is largely at right now. And I don't think we really fully addressed this issue of restrictions of our own individual property rights or ability to utilize goats, for example, to help mitigate the fire hazard in our back parts of our parcel. That hasn't been fully addressed by the full neighborhood. Okay.
Any other questions? Okay, thank you.
Okay, thank you very much for giving us this opportunity.
Is there anybody else in the audience that would like to speak on this? Seeing none, I'll bring it back to the commission. And excuse me, did you not hear me when I asked? Oh, okay, I'll open it back up.
I'm David Tissue. I live on Eagle Creek Court. We have CCNRs to cover the concerns about animals on our lots. They're not permitted, grazing animals and that sort of thing. We have a great many CCNRs that aren't necessarily enforced, but they are enforceable. All of us would like to see this project move forward as quickly as possible. And in its presented state, it's very viable and feasible from my personal point of view, and I think from that point of view of my neighbors as well. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anybody else? Okay, I'll close it again. And I'll bring it back to the commission for discussion, additions, etc., and I'll just start going down the line here.
I think CCNRs, as I understand the project, CCNRs do not apply to the two new houses. The current CCNRs?
The CCNRs follow the maps. So this will be the third map that's been recorded within the PD8 area. Potentially new CCNRs or no CCNRs would be recorded here. We have requirements that CCNRs would be required here. But we don't know exactly what the requirements of those would be, so it's possible it would be different than existing CCNRs for the Elm Court.
Okay.
For their own properties, right?
Correct.
Yeah, I think, but what we're saying is that there's some larger lots that, you know, all the property owners to a certain degree, if they wanted to put a couple goats out there to take down the weeds, you know, that would be available as an option.
But that's allowable now with the current CCNRs on
their own property.
Parcels, right?
Yeah, but we could just clarify it, you know, with the PD, just so there wouldn't be a question that although you can't have livestock, you can do, you know, annual fuel management with animals.
Mm-hmm.
Well, didn't Mr. Tissue just clarify that the existing CCNRs prohibit animals, livestock, goats, sheep? Or am I the only one that heard it that way?
I'm not that familiar with the CCNR, so I can't tell you exactly what they say one way or the other.
In order to be consistent, is it unreasonable to require the new houses to abide by the CCNRs that are in existence? Okay.
I think that's what I heard Warren say.
Okay. I don't have any more for now. Thank you.
Okay. Do you have any questions?
I have no questions.
Do you have any?
I think Mr. Marks asked one of the questions that I had about the livestock, and maybe the second one, too. It seems like the surest thing is to adopt the condition, at a condition of approval, adopting the same, the CCRs for the two new homes that same as exist for the existing homes.
Yeah, and just to comment on that, on page 250 on the conditions for the vesting map, condition 10 is a requirement for CCNRs on the map, and then there's a sub A, sub B that provide some minimum requirements for the CCNRs. So if the commission wanted to add additional restrictions, requirements for the CCNRs, that would be the ideal place to add it as a subcondition C.
I was just suggesting the same as existing and as follows.
That was on what number, Warren?
Page 250, 10.
Okay.
I also heard Mr. Pietro talk. I think I messed that up
Pierre
the second
Tom.
Time. Talk about the time frame of the project and how important that is to the neighborhood. How can we get a handle on moving that along as quickly as possible? Are there any conditions, for example, that we could add that would tighten up this project schedule?
Well, the council already directed staff to start processing development permits before these entitlements were approved. So we actually already are in plan check on the house changes. We still haven't received the grading permit in yet, I don't believe. But that's the biggest hindrance usually, is you have to get your entitlements before you can apply for your construction permits. Council's already addressed that issue. So I think everything's been done potentially to expedite this project.
Thing that the applicant provide us right away as shown on the exhibit. It is not approved plan by the City Council yet. It has not been approved by Slow Car or Caltrans. It's in its preliminary stages. This is a request, and that's all it is.
And do you think it's an important request?
Yes, as Public Works Facility, a circulation facility, I think it's an important request to start obtaining this right away so in the future we can build these facilities.
Okay, thank you.
And if that were not obtained at this time, then according to the staff report, the city would have to purchase it later. Is that correct? That is correct.
I would like to have two conditions added, and the one is for the maintenance plan. And the biologist said a minimum of 5 years, so I'm going to go 5 plus 1 for a maintenance plan, just to ensure everything is well established. And a condition.
You mean 6 years?
6 years. And that the fencing be replaced, and that the three rail fencing, that be replaced with that, because they said the fencing is deteriorating.
Well, the project's already conditioned that all the pipe rail fence be removed and replaced.
Which is
pipe metal fence here. This would be taken out and replaced with this type of fence.
Okay.
But we don't necessarily have a condition in there about the condition of this existing white rail fence. So is that what you want to add a condition for?
Well, what kind of fencing were you going to put in? Basically, That's what I heard him say, but I'm also interested in having fencing that allows the critters to move through. So it looks like that would do it because it's not that high.
It's a, I believe the plans show this is a 4 foot high fence.
Okay.
May I ask something? Mr. Pirto said the existing fence is falling down. He had two suggestions, either remove it or replace it. Someone's going to have to pay for the maintenance of it if it's replaced. Is it necessary to have the fence? My concern is we're going to stick the developer with cost of repairing the fence or the homeowners. And if the fence isn't necessary.
Yeah, if a fence isn't necessary, then why put it up?
Exactly.
Well, I think typically, you know, in these kind of projects, defining the boundaries just for maintenance and security purposes typically is a good idea, especially along, you know, highway or freeway or among lots, that if you don't put a fence in, somebody else is going to put a different fence in, and then it's very hard or it's impossible for staff to make sure those fences meet any sort of consistency standard. So I think we already have a fencing standard there. The fences are in most of the right places. Probably best to make sure all the fences are in good condition and then install the new fences where they're appropriate would probably be the best way to handle it.
Okay. I'd like to ask the biologist if, could you come back up to the microphone, is 4 feet distal number one that gets the open space easement?
Commissioner O'Keefe, I would like to supplement part of your condition regarding the open space maintenance agreement. I would like to make that subject to city approval, I think as was suggested by the biologist, and secondly, as was suggested by Mr. Gearhart, that a performance guarantee be part of that agreement that has adequate financial security.
I kind of assume that, so, but yeah. It's fine.
Is that okay?
Sure. I was making an assumption that that would be a part of it. So we've just added, I guess, and it's just one condition. Is that what it is? Because you said the fencing was already part of it.
Fencing's already there, but if you want to add a condition about repairing the existing fence, we could add that as well.
Okay, and repairing the existing fence.
So the fence is page 230, condition 10, would be where we would add that potentially.
Okay. And I think we're prepared to make a motion. Does anybody want to do it? I'll go ahead. I recommend that the Planning Commission adopt Resolution 2007-0089, recommending the Council certify the proposed mitigated negative deck. Two, adopt draft resolution 2007-0090, recommending the Council approve the general plan amendment based on findings. And three, adopt draft resolution 2007-0091, recommending the Council introduce for first reading by title only a draft ordinance approving zone text change. 2005-0111, amending the PD overlay district based on findings. And adopt resolution 2007-0092, recommending the Council adopt for first reading by title only a draft ordinance approving zoning map change 2005-011. Five, adopt the draft resolution 2007-0093, recommending the City Council approve conditional use permit 2005-0175, based on findings and subject to the conditions of approval and mitigation monitoring, and 6, adopt draft resolution 2007-0094, recommending the council approve vesting tentative map 2005-008, based on findings and subject to conditions of approval and mitigation monitoring. Is there a second?
Can I just make sure that those conditions that we talked about are part of your motion?
They were.
Should be added to both the conditional use permit and the map.
Okay. Okay, so.
And then condition that the existing fence be repaired, which would be an amendment to condition 10 of the CUP.
Okay.
And then I believe we spoke about allowing limited grazing of animals for annual fuel management be permitted. And if we wanted to do that, I'd recommend we add that to the zone change text, the CUP, and the map, so all three are consistent.
Okay.
Would that also be part of the maintenance agreement? Would that language appear in there as well?
No, that's a different part of it.
That's a different thing.
Yeah,
okay.
Because you have annual weed abatement, but the maintenance program is time limited. Okay, so with those additional conditions, is there a second? Yes.
We still haven't we haven't fully discussed, I don't think, the roundabout property, have we?
Oh, that's in the condition. They asked that it be removed. The applicant asked that it be removed.
Okay.
And we didn't make a recommendation that it be removed.
Okay. You mentioned white oaks and blue oaks, concentrating on those. Did you want to do that as part of a condition, or just work with staff, let them work
to work with
staff.
Okay.
Thank you.
A note I made, it was about removal of metal fencing. Was that part of your other?
That's part of it, because the fencing is going to be either replaced or fixed. And so, so that'll
that's how on. We have it.
Yes. So, is there a second?
Oh, I'll second that.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded. Roll call.
Commissioner O'Grady?
Yes.
Commissioner Slane?
Yes.
Commissioner Marks?
Yes.
Chairperson O'Keefe?
Yes.
4-0, motion passes.
Okay. Thank you. Do we need another break before we do the condominium? Okay. Okay. Okay, we can move on with item number 7, the condominium ordinance update.
Thank you, Chairwoman O'Keefe, Commissioners, Carrie Morgeson, Planning Staff. Trying to get a little situated here. This next item before you is a draft condominium ordinance. Staff will be looking for a recommendation to the City Council. This staff went to the City Council and we asked for a moratorium. Shortly after that, staff was introduced to the site condominium, which is a bit of a hybrid type project. It's staff's opinion that that's a creative way to get through the loopholes and create a subdivision out of a condominium project. So again, staff went back to City Council and the City Council issued a moratorium. Currently, our municipal code does not address commercial, industrial, residential, airspace, or site condominiums. Our subdivision ordinance does address conversions, condo conversions. This draft ordinance that's before you tonight will address all condominium projects, commercial, industrial, residential, and require that a conditional use permit be processed for any project of four units or more, of more than four units. So at five units, you would have to do a conditional use permit. That CUP will allow for staff review and for planning commission approval of the project so that when we have site condominiums, we can address them on their merits. We will know that we're dealing with the site condominium when the project first comes in instead of after the fact. And then condo conversion requests will be correlated to apartment production. So there'll be a quantified way to maintain our rental inventory. And I have Barbara Kautz with me here tonight, who is our housing consultant, and she has helped us put this ordinance together. And she's going to take us through the condominium conversion requirements and the updates to that. So I'm going to turn this over to Barbara.
Hi, I'm happy to be here. Is my mic on?
Yes.
I think I was last here in February when you had a joint meeting with the city council, and the council and the commission went through a list of policy options and decided on what you would like in a condominium conversion ordinance. So we've drafted that for you. That's the ordinance that's in front of you tonight, and I just thought I'd go through briefly what some of the key provisions of that ordinance are. The first is, as Carrie said, is that a conditional use permit would be required for condominium conversions of five or more. And the reason for requiring a use permit rather than simply relying on a tentative map is that a variety of court decisions and the way the MAP Act is written basically give the city more authority when it controls something through the zoning and use permit process and through the tentative map process. So that's why most of the tentative map requirements have been replaced with conditional use permit requirements. The new ordinance requires that condominium conversions of five or more meet the city's standards for affordable inclusionary housing that you would normally apply to multifamily residential projects. For disabled and elderly tenants, so they would have a total of a year and a half. And for tenants with school-age children, they would be able to stay at least 30 days beyond the end of the school year. So if the 180 days would ordinarily end in March, they'd be able to stay till, say, June or July, depending on when the school year ended. There's also the state law allows tenants to remain, and your ordinance allows them to remain for 180 days or more. And so there'd be limits on rent increases and allow eviction only for cause during that period, to make sure that those protections weren't undercut. Your ordinance already has various physical requirements for condominium conversions, and we've made only minor changes in that. One is that the tenants would be given, or any purchasers would be given, a one-year warranty, and there'd be a requirement for exterior lighting. And the big change to try to make sure that the city maintains its rental housing stock is this correlation with apartment construction. Basically, you would only be able to allow conversions each year equal to 25% of your rental housing production. If you recall, when we had this discussion with the council, the city of San Luis Obispo allows conversions that are equal to half the amount of new apartment construction. The county allows conversions equal to 25% of the amount of new apartment construction, and there was a consensus on the commission and council to allow condominium conversions that are equal to only 25% of new apartment construction. And that's a pretty rigid restriction, you know, which will probably severely limit any conversions in buildings of five or more for some time. There's two changes that we would suggest you make in this ordinance when you recommend approval to the council. The first has to do with, on page 20, we had a note saying that there was a new law about notice to tenants that was proposed, and that bill was signed by the governor this weekend. The changes in the noticing are pretty minor. There's a new notice that a public report's been issued. It specifies the form of the notice. Kind of something that will be a big concern, I think, to anybody who wants to convert is that if the rental agreement was negotiated in Spanish, Chinese, Tagalog, Vietnamese, or Korean, all the notices have to be provided in that language. But those are state law requirements, and so we'd suggest that you recommend, you know, that when you recommend approval, direct the staff to make conforming changes in the ordinance. The second issue has to do with the exemption for four units or less. When this was discussed with the council, the council and commission agreed to exempt conversions of four units or less from the requirements for inclusionary and from this correlation with apartment production. So basically, these smaller conversions could proceed. But we realized that the way we had drafted the ordinance, we had also we've also exempted the four or less from requirements, from some existing requirements and requirements they should meet. So we would ask that when you recommend, when you make your recommendation to the council, to also make the conversions for four units or less subject to the requirements qualify for as redevelopment, as affordable units under redevelopment law. You might be aware that redevelopment law requires that 15% of all housing constructed in a redevelopment area be affordable, either to low or moderate income households. But the standards are quite rigid. You know, it requires a long term of affordability, 45 years for ownership. And so the issue is whether you might want the units, any converted units in the redevelopment area, to conform to redevelopment law, which would allow the city to meet some of its redevelopment requirements. So on the condo conversion part, we're recommending that you approve the ordinance and recommend that the staff make two changes, one in to the conforming changes regarding noticing according to the law that was just signed, modifications to clarify the intent regarding the smaller conversions for four or more. Four or fewer, that they would be subject to the noticing, tenant protection, and physical requirements, and then whether or not you would be interested in having these units qualify for redevelopment credit. And I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Okay, are there any questions?
Yeah,
go ahead.
Commissioner O'Keefe?
Yes.
Just to finish this up,
The
new condo development requirements that are also included in this ordinance require inclusionary housing in the projects on the same formula as for conversions, 20%, and then the breakdown that's shown in the ordinance. Also a conditional use permit, common usable open space, much like our multifamily standards now, but it just gives us more opportunity to review and make sure that we have usable open space. And then in addition to the changes that Ms. Couch just mentioned for the ordinance, staff has one more change, and that's to remove section 9-12.101I. That provision talks about condominium plans, and state law actually has jurisdiction over those condo plans. They don't allow the city to regulate them. So we need to just
What do you mean by condo plans?
The condominium plan is a document that's generally recorded with the subdivision map that shows the interior space of the building and how that condo is configured. We can look at the building footprint on the ground.
Uh-huh.
But we have no provisions for controlling or regulating or conditioning how they divide the space up on the interior.
Okay.
And that does conclude staff's presentation. Thank you.
Okay, go ahead.
A few questions. The ordinance applies to all condominiums. Is that correct? Now, I think one of your early slides mentioned airspace condos, but I thought that was airspace condos. That was all condos because it's the space inside. But does that denote something else that's special? Or is that just a general term for a condo? You put an adjective in front of it and it doesn't change anything. Or is that significant? How is airspace, that word is getting me.
Yeah, let me add, because I'm having a problem with this too. So you've got airspace, and then you've got site condos, but there's some airspace with those too. And
right,
I'm,
but that's
I'm
not the same.
Typically so, an airspace is you have one building, just one building, and it's divided on the inside only into four units. So kind of like a duplex, all shared walls, no separation between the units. That's an airspace. The units are all contained inside the one building. A site condominium is a little trickier. A site condominium doesn't describe the airspace between the walls. It draws lines so that the lines go to the center of the earth and infinity in the sky, and actually draws lines on the ground so that rather than having a footprint of a building with some air inside that you own a square of property. You end up with a little lot, much like our PDs, very similar to our PDs, except they circumvent the subdivision process and do it through the condo process.
Okay. This four units or less then would not be subject to the provisions of this ordinance. What is a unit? In other words, if let's say you have a box with 24 sections or segments in it, but in groups of four, somebody says, "Well, that's a partition that meets the NFPA requirements for a wall between units. So therefore, I've got six four-unit structures. That now I'm not subject to that. Is that prevented in here by definition or otherwise?"
Again, we can't regulate that airspace unit, and in a commercial and industrial condominium, an airspace can get quite complex. Sometimes they can be 1 by 1 by 1 foot squares, these cubes that run through the building, and how they divide those cubes up, we don't really get involved with. But they can't have more units than is approved when they do their subdivision. So typically, for us, we don't get as involved in those complicated condominiums because we just don't have such complicated developers, I guess. But
a 24-unit condominium, that's what I'm trying to say. So somehow I think you need to look at the various ways that these could be arranged and make sure that this ordinance does indeed apply on a site if there's so many. Maybe you tie it to the site, but I just saw a potential loophole there in your ordinance and didn't know whether it was covered.
How would you address that? And is that, do you see that? I mean, they are creative about loopholes, so is this a potential loophole?
I think that we have tried to address that in the ordinance, especially as far as the residential condos go. Barbara, do you want to answer that?
Is your concern the site condos more than the condominium conversions, or is it both?
No, I'm
thinking about new condominiums.
New condominiums. The only new condominiums that are exempt are there are residential condominiums of 4 units or less. You could eliminate the exemption for new condos. That's A, right?
Well, if you have, if you don't have that exemption in there for the 4 units, that also allows for staff to have more control over how it's with the conditional use permit then.
Yeah, I mean, for the new condos, because my understanding is your concern is about the new construction, right? I mean, you could eliminate if you... You know, the reason for...
Well, I have a concern with the conversions also.
Oh, okay.
Because we've had conversions as small as 2 units and couldn't attach any conditions to make it a nice project.
Under applicability in, let's see, it begins on page 273 and at the top of page 274, it says residential condominium developments of 4 units or less... provided that the units are contained within a residential development containing no more than 4 dwelling units. So that means if we have 4 buildings on one lot and each one has 4 units, then that's not 4 units and they are not exempt. That's 4 buildings of 4 units for 16 units.
Right.
In order for it to be 4 units or less, the entire subdivision has to have been 4 units. It can't be more than 4 units. So,
And in terms of the condominium conversions, I don't think it was very clear at the commission council meeting that the 4 or less were to be excluded from a conditional use permit. I think what the 4 or less were going to be excluded from were the kind of the controls on rate of conversion. So
okay.
If the commission would like the 4 or less, you know, converted units to be subject to a use permit, but not subject to the affordability and kind of rate regulation.
Yeah. Okay, let me have a little discussion here because I would like to see the conditional use permit for the 4 or less, just simply because we can make a nicer project, but I'd like to hear from the other commissioners.
I have to agree with you.
Yeah. Probably look at the language and clarify it. There's actually a special notification procedure for new tenants. You have to notify them that the building's going to be converted and so forth. But I think you're probably correct that some of those protections, you know, for the 180 days and so forth should apply to anybody moving in before the project's complete, probably.
One of your suggested conditions, well, I don't know if you just asked about this redevelopment agency, redevelopment projects that had different affordability terms.
Right.
Is that the only downside to that you see? Are there other?
Let's see. There's two probably changes with the redevelopment. One is the longer term of affordability for 45 years. The other would be that the selling prices would need to be a little bit lower.
Why is that?
Let's see, I was just going to look at this. For lower-income units, the redevelopment, your inclusionary policies set the rents based on 30% of 80% of median income. In redevelopment areas, they have to be based on 30% of 70% of median income for low-income units.
30% of 70%, what's the other one?
The city's policies,
yeah.
The general inclusionary policies are 30% of 80% of median income for lower income tenants.
Okay.
Redevelopment is 30% of 70% of median income. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
But the city gets credit for.
But the city gets credit.
Do you know just offhand what Paso, San Luis Obispo, other cities, do you know what their policy is on this?
I don't believe San Luis Obispo has a redevelopment area, so not an issue for them. I'm not sure what Paso does.
Yeah. Just a comment. I was glad to see that there are, under development standards, there are requirements for exterior lighting for security and safety, and I would like to see those requirements extended to other residential projects.
Okay, you know, I just realized we're getting into a discussion, and is there anybody in the public who would like to, would you like to, so, because you may raise some issues that we might want to follow up on.
Good evening, all. This is really brief. I'm Mark Gibbs. I live on Senegal Road in Atascadero. I've spoken to you before. I'm a realtor. But some of the Carrie did a pretty good definition of condo.
Yes. The standard is that 20% of the converted units would be inclusionary. That's the same standard that the city has for new multifamily projects.
Correct.
And of that 20%, it's 4% very low, 7.5% low, and 8.5% moderate.
Okay, I just want to hear the percentage. So, yeah. And that's also on new projects?
That's also for new projects.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, thank you. All right, we'll bring it back to the commission then. Any other questions? So what you're asking, we made a couple suggestions with regard to the four units.
Yes.
With to require the CUP. And then you said that we needed to make a change with regard to the noticing so that because the state law had now changed?
Right.
Okay. And then on four units or less.
That's what that was.
Yeah, that's what. Yeah. Okay.
For four or less, that the physical noticing and tenant protections would all apply.
Yes, yeah.
If I could help out, there was also a condition to remove section 9-12.101I.
Right.
And then there was another condition to subject all condominiums to conditional use permit regardless of the number of units.
Right.
And then we agree with the redevelopment credit. I guess we all do. We want to do that.
I don't know. I don't really think I can't really digest the implications, you know, of what the significance would be. Could you give us a little help?
For the redevelopment credits? I don't know if you're going to answer. I can't see. Staff would recommend that the commission, this is a recommendation to the council,
right.
So creative ideas may be appropriate here. I think that to have two different numbers would be fine. I think it's very important that the city gets credit for their inclusionary housing in the redevelopment area.
Okay.
So for all housing in redevelopment area, maybe it meets redevelopment standards. Housing outside, inclusionary housing outside,
okay.
That meets our regular standards.
Okay.
I think that's an option. But I think maybe a little brainstorming about that's certainly appropriate.
I don't know how to brainstorm it.
At this time of night, yeah. Right.
I mean, I think, I'm sorry, I don't have the numbers for what the difference is between the 80% of median and the 70% of median for the lows. My understanding is that the city has something of a, needs more affordable units within the redevelopment area. Is that
so
correct?
Then that we should go with the 30% of 70% for the redevelopment. Is that what you're saying?
Right. I would simply say that within the redevelopment area that
okay.
The project.
Is there a consensus on that?
Units.
No. Okay. Now,
recommending that the City Council introduce an ordinance for first reading by title only to approve PLN 2006-1111, which is zone change 2006-0118, based on findings. And I hope I don't have to repeat all of those conditions that we just, so I'd just make my motion that it incorporates all the conditions that we just discussed.
Would you like me to read back what I have?
Yes.
Yes. First of all, there would be a conditional use permit for all condominiums and condominium conversions, regardless of size. The change in the noticing requirements to conform with state law. A clarification that for condominium conversions of four or less, the requirements for physical condition noticing and the tenant protections would apply. Removing 912.101I regarding condominium plans. Affordable units within the redevelopment project area would meet redevelopment standards. And lastly, that we, but not least, clarify that the tenant protections apply not only to existing tenants, but to all tenants.
Yes. Okay.
I second.
Okay. It's been moved and seconded. Roll call.
It was Mark.
Yes.
Commissioner O'Grady?
Yes.
Commissioner Marks?
Yes.
Commissioner Slane?
Yes.
Chairperson O'Keefe?
Yes.
4-0, motion passes.
Okay, we'll go on to commissioner comments and reports. Any commissioner comments and reports? I have a comment, and that has to do with the project on the north end of El Camino Real, where the and the one that Andy Fedko is working on. And those windows out there are not covered, and we've already had rain on that, you know, the historical house. And I haven't seen any movement of any change at all. So, I mean, realistically, can you do anything? You know, where are you on this?
We've been discussing our options there. I think that is going to be our approach, is to direct the applicant to not only secure the site for the winter in terms of the stormwater protection plan, but also to secure the Colony House, because obviously that's not going to get restored before the winter, so that we can minimize water damage and other damage to it over the storms this winter.
Well, do you have a time frame?
Well, to a certain degree, it's dependent on the applicant. We can't go out and do work on private property, so we will... I think we're in the process right now of contacting him. If he complies, then it could happen fairly quickly. If he refuses to comply, it's very difficult to gain compliance when somebody refuses, and then it becomes a legal matter. And hopefully it doesn't become that, but
well,
that is a possibility.
It's sort of like deja vu with the Printry, except that was a historical building. Well, a state registered historical building.
Yeah, and I think, you know, we can all agree what the right thing to do is, but there's also the legal things of what the city can do at the drop of a hat. And if a property owner is non-cooperative and it becomes a legal matter, once it becomes a legal matter, it denied the map. So that map is basically dead at this point. They cannot reapply until a year has passed with another map on that site. So staff's basically advised them of that information, and we don't know anything more about that. I'm not sure exactly what's on my next Planning Commission agenda. I don't have that program up tonight. We do have a fifth Tuesday in October, so it's 3 weeks to your next Planning Commission instead of two, so your next regular meeting will be November 6th. I'll conclude my report.
Thank you. Meeting is adjourned.
Everybody.
Yeah, there was a lot.